On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! It's a minute past the hour. A weekend has gone by. It was a weekend that saw the Country Roads Festival take place here in this little hamlet that we call home, what's left of it, what isn't being blown to smithereens in the mountains above us. And it was a lovely time. There was some gospel singing going on. There was an apple butter making. There was some fudge being sold. There was an antique classic car show that would just make you weep. Oh, yeah, this beautiful 59 Thunderbird, sort of robin's egg blue, and 67 Chevelle SS, of course. No, just a lot of gorgeous. MG Midget, another MGB. Just a nice little walk around. So that's what the weekend was like. Hope yours was good as well. Hope your team won on Saturday or Sunday. I know for a fact that, well, we already know what the Mountaineers did in Boulder, Colorado on Thursday. I was really hoping for Auburn to pull it out against LSU, but was kind of hoping, well, no, not kind of, really hoping for Tennessee to find some way to stop the Florida juggernaut. Tough day for the Steelers yesterday. And a tough day for the pack, too. Yeah. So that somebody out there's got to be happy. But also over the course of the weekend, there was no getting away from the obvious news, the obviously the preeminent developing story, namely the bailout. And frankly, it beggars description. The gall, the nerve of the Bush administration suggesting what they have suggested is almost beyond comprehension. If it was anybody but the Bush administration, I would say, you know, how dare they? But how dare they is, you know, that's not a criticism. That's the motto of the Bush administration. I mean, there's so many different ways to approach the absolute disgust that the Wall Street bailout engenders in me and in many of you. For instance, I did some Googling around. You know, I just go and ask the Google questions, and sort of like the magic eight ball, it spits out a number, or an answer, rather. And let's see if I can replicate it. Let's see. How much would universal health care cost for America? Tell me, almighty Google. Well, so the numbers obviously are not, I mean, there's no one number. But it is obvious that if we can afford, and yeah, I know there are those people out there who would say, well, you know, they're not the same thing, Bob. We have to bail out the gamblers on Wall Street. I don't think any of you are saying that. So, well, here's a number for you. No, it is, it's not the same thing because, you know, there's priorities and there's priorities. We've thrown the National Treasury down the toilet in Iraq and Afghanistan. We've thrown billions down the toilet with Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae or Fannie Mac and Freddie, Freddie Prince. We have wasted scads of money on the tax breaks for the wealthiest one-tenth of 1% of America. Now, here's an interesting number, however. $15 billion. At this point, as compared to what? $1.8 trillion? That's what we started out with, it's going to be $700 billion, 7/10 of a trillion dollars. And then when there were no pitchforks and torches, the lines, mobs marching on the White House, they thought, well, hey, it's going over good. That's going to be $1.3 or $1.8 trillion. Okay, that's all. Now we're using decimals. See, it's littler money. So a number like $15 billion, that's what they've done. In a way, I guess, what could you call it? You could call it verbal economic deflation. You follow what I'm saying? You take a number like $700 billion, and then you change it over to $1.3 trillion or $1.8 trillion, and you know, 1.8 is always smaller than 700. Because that's the way these right wing thugs assume that the American mind operates. And for all I know, they may be correct. Anytime the word billion is involved, however, you know that you're talking about a gargantuan sum. This country, you, me, taxpayers. We pay $15 billion more in taxes because of the cost of care for the uninsured. That's a generally agreed upon sum, $15 billion. Let's see, no, that's not one-tenth, not a fifth. No, it's not a 20th, a 40th. The cost for health care for uninsured America is something above, if I've got my numbers correct, something above 1/40th of the low end of the threshold of the Wall Street bailout. Dig it. Kind of stirring, isn't it? So we could have insurance for the uninsured, health care insurance for the uninsured for 30 years? 30 years for the cost that the Wall Street bailout's costing us? And that's kind of hard to stomach. Uh-oh, I'm trapped in upspeak, you know? Like groovy? Nah, it's definitely not groovy. Nah. Jesus, Mary and Joseph. Healthcare in this country costs us $2.2 trillion. That's the for-profit stuff. $2.2 trillion for healthcare that doesn't get everybody covered. So, in other words, what they haven't... See, there's more at work here. And this isn't some sort of paranoid theory. It's just an observation. But what we've got at work here is the Bush administration finishing the job. What they couldn't do directly, remember they wanted to put Social Security into the stock market in 2004. I just won re-election and I'm going to spend some political capital. Yes. We're going to piratize your Social Security. Remember that? Well, the American people wanted no part of it, and in part it cost the Republican Party the Congress in 2006. Not that the Democratic Congress has done anything really to stop them. We'll get to that in a minute. But Bush never, and the Bush, and the loyal Bushies never give up. They don't give up. What they can't do directly, they'll do by subterfuge. They'll do in the still of the night. They'll do in purse fashion. So now, they're going to finish us off. They're going to kick us in the groin, stomp us in the kidneys, and put their boots on our throat by giving whatever last little bit of America still remained, they're going to give that to the Wall Street gambling crowd. It is stunning, the level of their brass, their audacity. But that's where we are. And, you know, I was reminded of back a couple of weeks ago. I was away from the microphone. I was out on the road. And that's when the lipstick on a pig controversy came up. Oh, my God, Barack Obama called Sarah Palin a pig. Maybe that's a language lesson for Senator Obama. Make it abundantly clear. You know, it's a cute little phrase, lipstick on a pig, but it doesn't quite reflect reality. No, it really doesn't. What we're talking about here, what we are talking about in regard to the Wall Street bailout, is a $1 trillion tube of lipstick on a corpse. That's really, really what it is. I'm sorry if the image is overly graphic, but Wall Street is dead right now. And it's good, and frankly, I don't believe, and I doubt that you do, although you're free to disagree with me if you wish. It's not like I'm going to bark at you or anything. I don't feel like being the ashes from which the phoenix arises. Wall Street, this is George Bush's baby. Let George Bush find a way to pay for it that doesn't involve you and doesn't involve me. Maybe it's time that the Wall Street banking house CEOs paid for it. Maybe, possibly. Is it possibly time that... Hey, we could take it out of the off-the-books money we're pumping, still pumping down the rat hole in Iraq and Afghanistan. No, we can't do that. Dear God, we're coming closer. We're approaching having already paid... Jesus. What's going to be left? See, I get it. You know, the Wall Street did the in-the-toilet thing again today. I don't know if that was some sort of blackmail. Oh, we're gonna keep sending stock prices down until you pony up the until. This is, any of you who've ever dealt with addiction, isn't this addict behavior what Wall Street's doing? I think it was Paul Krugman who said that an intervention is called for at this point. This makes me, and you know, I don't see why the American people, I really don't see why the American people should pay to put lipstick on this corpse. Are you paying attention, Senator Obama? You use the lipstick on a corpse line, and then when, oh my God, he called John McCain a corpse! You come out very plainly and you say, no dummies in the media, no you right-wing idiots, I said the corpse is Wall Street. It's been faked up, dummied up, ginned up, frauded up, and rubed up for 8 long years, and it's time they sober up and clean up. Nobody can get sober but a drunk. Nobody can get clean but an addict. A loving mother, a loving father, aunt, uncle, cousin, best friend, spouse, child, can't get clean, can't sober up. And that's what the bailout is. It's us saying, okay, we'll never touch the stuff again, Wall Street, but that doesn't mean you can't. I think Al-Anon has a word for that. Isn't that called enabling or facilitating behavior? The Rick Goodner white courtesy phone, isn't that called codependent behavior? Or aren't there some fun, you know, $15 words for what it is the American people are being asked to do for a bunch of people on Wall Street who don't think they have a problem? I know there's lots of you that have been through 12-step programs. Tell me how much good saving someone is when the someone you're saving doesn't think he or she has a problem. Because that's kind of where we are. Wall Street doesn't think it has a problem. John McCain, the old 894, John McHoover, doesn't think Wall Street has a problem. Does Wall Street have a problem? Call me crazy, but it sure seems to me like it does. Now, I'm going to go to the phones in just a second, so please don't run off just yet. I want to share some words with you from a brilliant, brilliant piece of writing. Actually, it was a speech. And it has to do with how we live our lives. I'm halfway tempted to read the whole blessed thing, but I won't. From a man named David Foster Wallace. He was about a year older than me, and he was on orders of magnitude about a million, billion, jillion times more intelligent than me. Lots of people are. But he delivered a commencement address at Kenyon College a few years back. And he's talking about how we choose to think and what we choose to pay attention to. And how we choose to live. He said, the only thing that's capital T true is that you get to decide how you're going to try to see reality. This, I submit, is the freedom of a real education, of learning how to be well adjusted. You get to consciously decide what has meaning and what doesn't. You get to decide what to worship. Because here's something else that's weird but true. In the day-to-day trenches of adult life, there is actually no such thing as atheism. There is no such thing as not worshiping. Everybody worships. The only choice we get is what to worship. And the compelling reason for maybe choosing some sort of God or spiritual type thing to worship, be it JC or Allah, be it YHWH or the Wiccan Mother Goddess or the Four Noble Truths or some inviolable set of ethical principles, is that pretty much anything else you worship will eat you alive. If you worship money and things, if they are where you tap real meaning in life, then you will never have enough, never feel you have enough. It's the truth. Worship your body and beauty and sexual allure and you will always feel ugly. And when time and age start showing, you will die a million deaths before they finally grieve you. On one level, we already know this stuff already. It's been codified as myths, proverbs, cliches, epigrams, parables, the skeleton of every great story. The whole trick is keeping the truth up front in daily consciousness. Worship power, you will end up feeling weak and afraid. And you will need ever more power over others to numb you to your own fear. Worship your intellect, being seen as smart. You will end up feeling stupid, a fraud, always on the verge of being found out. But the insidious thing about these forms of worship is not that they're evil or sinful, it's that they're unconscious. They are default settings. They're the kind of worship you just gradually slip into day after day, getting more and more selective about what you see and how you measure value without ever being fully aware that that's what you're doing. And the so-called real world will not discourage you from operating on your default settings, because the so-called real world of men and money and power hums merrily along in a pool of fear and anger and frustration and craving and worship of self. Our own present culture has harnessed these forces in ways that have yielded extraordinary wealth and comfort and personal freedom. The freedom all to be lords of our tiny skull-sized kingdoms, alone at the center of all creation. This kind of freedom has much to recommend it, but of course there are all different kinds of freedom, and the kind that is most precious you will not hear much talk about much in the great outside world of wanting and achieving, and the really important kind of freedom involves attention and awareness and discipline and being able to truly care about other people and to sacrifice for them over and over in myriad petty, unsexy ways every day. That is real freedom. That is being educated and understanding how to think. The alternative is unconsciousness, the default setting, the rat race, the constant gnawing sense of having had and lost some infinite thing. How's that? Oh, I think he nailed it on the dismount, Bob. Yeah, indeed. Indeed. Isn't that our culture in a nutshell? Isn't that Wall Street? Isn't that the Bush administration? Isn't that why we attacked a nation that had done nothing to us? Isn't that why we destroyed what was left of Afghanistan? What was that line about power? Worship power, you will end up feeling weak and afraid, and you will need ever more power over others to numb you to your own fear. You see, that's the thing. The Repiglicans are a bunch of cowards. Gutless punks. It's why they talk about military service with such fervor and never go. They're terrified, and the only way they can mask their terror is by terrorizing others. And as I think it was Dean Baker observed today, the terrorism speech has come to Wall Street. Oh, if Congress doesn't act right now, I mean, if they don't give us everything. Because, see, one of the things that drives me just bananas out of all this is that Henry Paulson, the Treasury Secretary, who worked for Goldman Sachs before becoming Treasury Secretary, who drove this bus off the cliff in part, yeah, part of the whole scam, the scheme, the three-part card Monte game, the find the pea under the ball thing, the shoot out the target with the BB gun with the bent barrel affair. Part of that is that we give him $700 billion or a trillion or what the hell ever. He spends it any way he wants to, and he gets immunity for it, and no court can review his decisions. Holy crap. Does that send chills down your spine? Because it's working hell on mine. No court can review it, just with a stroke of a pen. The third branch of government, even the third branch of government with creeps like Scalia and Alito and Roberts and Thomas and Kennedy, and even a third branch of government with creeps like them sitting at the top of it is better than no third branch of government at all. But the Bush administration proposal eliminates the third branch of government. And with those creeps at the head of the third branch of government, you can damn sure count on the fact that they would rule, oh, well, you know, Congress passed a bill and said, we don't have any jurisdiction, so we don't have any jurisdiction, okay? Pass the peyote. You know it. Sure you do. Worship power and you will feel powerless. Worship money and you will never have enough. You will never have enough. Ask any Wall Street banking house CEO whether he has enough money. You and I both know what the answer is, or will be. Well, no, you know, I was thinking about expanding my portfolio into some beefsteak mines, and I don't have the funds with which to do that, to capitalize that at the rate that I would prefer. So the answer is no, he doesn't have enough money. politicians never have enough power, and money people never have enough money. Enough is not in their lexicon. Let's go to the phone, see what's shaking. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, this is Juanita.
Hey, Juanita.
Who was that wrote that?
His name was David Foster Wallace. He hung himself about a week and a half ago.
Oh, my gosh. Well, do you think he really did it?
Oh, he really hung himself.
Yeah. Well, he was a great thinker.
Oh, he was. He wrote probably one of the most brilliant novels of the last half of the 20th century. It was called Infinite Jest, and it came out in 1996, and you deserve a cookie if you can finish reading it. It's so smart.
Infinite Jest?
Infinite Jest.
J-E-S-T?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm going to tell you a great quote I heard. This is like a one-sentence quote. I heard on call-in on C-SPAN this morning.
Mm-hmm.
I don't watch it like I used to because I've got liberal radio I can listen to. But anyway, he said that anybody that was contemplating not voting for Barack Obama because he was black should realize that the soup lines will not be segregated.
How true.
I thought that was so great. I thought that was a great line. I wrote it down. I said, I got to remember that.
Indeed. Right. They won't segregate the soup lines. But the thing is, there are old-fashioned bigots out there that would rather stand in a soup line than be helped by a man of African extraction.
It's so weird.
I can't identify with it. I don't understand it. I suspect you don't either, Juanita. But those people do exist.
Yeah, and I found out that someone I know, this lifelong Democrat, is not going to vote for him just because he's black. And he's lived in Alabama for quite a while, but that doesn't mean because he's from down here.
Yeah.
I said he could at least think of his grandchildren, you know, or his children, what they're going to have. And the thing is that he's had some, I won't say or what, but in prison. And I said, if we have McCain and Palin in, she could just disappear off the face of the earth and never hear from her again. If she's in prison. She doesn't even have to be in prison. This is the girl I was thinking about in particular. And I do know somebody that has disappeared in prison, in the prison system, that I tried to help locate, and we found out where he had been. It turns out that the place was closed down, and nobody could find out. His aunt called, you know, like in Washington, D.C. He was from Washington, D.C. And his aunt called all the places you're supposed to call, and nobody had a record of him, and still didn't. He had money that he had inherited, and it's still waiting on him. Nobody can find him.
Lordy.
The lawyers and all. So, you know. But anyhow, I was wanting to tell you about The View.
Yes.
What's the interesting thing is Barbara, she's getting on the ball. I hope she stays that way. The other day, I don't know if I told you this or not, but Elizabeth, you know, was saying some ding-dong something that Biden had said. And Barbara, you know, she got that little thing in her ear.
Right.
And she got the real quote.
Oh, God bless a good producer.
So today, she was ready. Elizabeth was saying that, you know, people saying that John McCain is lying in these ads, you know, and that was one of the questions that they had about the sex education thing. And she said that it was not a lie, that was absolutely the truth. She gave her reasons. And Barbara was kind of looking at her like, I thought, Barbara, you don't say something. And she did. She said, you left out a few things. And she presented her with what she's already prepared for that. And, of course, you know, the bill didn't go through.
Right.
And then,
right.
Then
there was that whole thing, there was so much to it. You know, sex education for children.
Oh, yeah.
You know, please.
And Sherry.
You know, I'm sure, Juanita, you know what sex education is for a five-year-old in kindergarten, don't you?
I don't know if they even have it around here.
Well, I'm sure they do. Because in the early 21st century, it would almost be educational malpractice not to. What you do is you sit.
Well,
you sit.
Educational malpractice going on.
I probably shouldn't have said that yet. That's all. That's about all there is. But you sit the little five-year-olds down and you say, "Now, children, if anybody ever asks you to get in a car with them that you don't know that mommy and daddy haven't told you you can ride with, don't do it. And if anybody ever tries to touch you here or there, you say no and you scream and you run away and you go find a grown-up."
Yeah.
That's what that is.
Okay.
In other words,
yeah.
Teaching children to resist and be cognizant
right.
of sexual
and you
abuse.
You have to do it. It's sad but true, but you have to do it. It's not that these things haven't gone on all throughout history. And, you know, the history of our country. But it does seem to be more for them.
Well, we finally got to a place in this society, I think, Juanita, where we decided that we're not willing to tolerate it anymore. We're not going to tolerate children having their childhoods ripped away from them, stolen from them, and give them years of nightmares and therapy bills and stuff. No, if we can prevent it, we're going to prevent it. That's all that is. But the right wingers, Barack Obama, if he doesn't get to kill the baby, if it's got one foot in the womb, well, Barack Obama wants to start telling that newborn all about sex the minute it's laying in the cradle and have them doing it by kindergarten.
Yeah, yeah. And that was what Elizabeth was defending that ad, you know. And, well, Barbara, I could tell Barbara was doing some thinking. And she just had it all ready.
Well, good. It's not. What? I don't know. Maybe she could give a seminar for Brian Williams and Charlie Gibson and Cutesy Couric and the rest of that crowd.
Yeah, Cutesy and not Cutesy Couric, but what's her face, the other one that was said it was too exotic for Obama to go to a high wife.
Oh Lord, yeah, I can't remember which
she
one.
She was on Sunday, and I turned it. I had to turn it.
Yeah.
They were disgusting.
Yeah, there's only so much you can put up with, Juanita.
I know, because she's so, she made me so mad in 2000. But anyway, whoops, I almost said it again. Whoops, I did it again.
Don't worry.
But I call her a lady. I don't like the sound of saying that woman. But anyway, Sherry, you know, she was raised Jehovah's Witness, and they don't believe in voting. And she's studying all this, and she said it caused her to read the bill for herself. And she was interrupted, and she was never asked about it again. Probably interrupted by Elizabeth. She won't let anybody hardly finish a sentence. But anyway, then Whoopi reiterated that she wants the government to forgive half of all mortgages so people will have a chance.
I don't think anybody with one of those ridiculous mortgages is looking to win the lottery or anything. But
to make it sound.
Well, exactly. You know, there's a religious term that comes out of the church. And supposedly the Roman Church still celebrates one every so often. They're called a Jubilee year.
Oh yeah, 50 years, yeah.
And Jubilee, the origins of Jubilee lie in the forgiveness of debt. I have that right?
Right. Yes, you do. And the land returned has been taken away from you.
So what we're talking about, about here is a Wall Street Jubilee.
And these people that call themselves Christians, they don't even know what it is.
Well,
you remember when DeLay was in Congress and they were trying to get some more unemployment for people?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no. They won't try to find a job if we do that. And they didn't get it either.
Hard to, I know.
But I saw that Secretary of the Treasurer and him saying, we've got to do it now, we've got to do it now. We don't have time to do put all that other in. We can do
No,
that
no
later.
Time to think about it, just do it.
You know good and well they won't put it in later, especially if we do Lolly in there, you know. I thought, you know, while I was talking and saying McCain, I said, Cain, isn't that funny? Cain and Bible?
Yep.
I didn't even think about that before. But anyway, Bill came on, and he was outstanding. I mean, some of it was a little baloney, you know, but that's him. And the time went by so fast, he was on most of the time. But what was cute was Wookiee says, you know, they're blaming you for this trouble now. And she said, why did you cause that? You know, she was tongue-in-cheek.
Mm-hmm.
Because she likes him very much. And she said she's worked with him and Hillary when they were in the White House. She's done things with them. But I think she's a person that is kind of nuanced, you know?
Right.
Not subtle, but nuanced, which I think subtle sounds conniving, which it can very well be, but the nuance is something that I really like.
Yeah, she's finessed.
Yep.
So what did he say? What did he say when she asked him that?
Well, he said, "Well, I don't know. What was it that I did that caused?" And then he said different things. He said he had made mistakes when he was in office. You know how we Southerners are, we Democrats are. We always, oh yeah, I made mistakes. You know, but the Republicans don't. They don't make mistakes.
No. They no. No, they make opportunities for us to improve.
Oh yeah.
Right. Yeah, that's it. Because see, this will be character building if America has to bail out Wall Street and give them a jubilee year.
And I think Barbara asked him about did Hillary want to be vice president, and this is what he said: take it or leave it alone. You know, a lot of people won't believe it, but. He said no, but said she would have if he had wanted her to. You know.
That's probably a fair answer. I don't contend.
Yeah.
I see nothing to disagree with.
A lot of people are not going to believe. But I'm going to tell you, remember Jeff, I forgot his last name, Jeff Staples, that had Radio Left?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That was my first liberal radio to listen to. I didn't have it. Anything before then. But anyway, they had a website that Clinton made me do it. It was funny.
Yeah, it's all Clinton. It's all Clinton's fault. Anytime anything goes wrong in the country, it won't take very long before some right-winger tries to find a way to...
I was saying it. That was too...
Yeah, I know. I know.
This morning called in and was, well, it's all his fault, you know. You know,
and to be honest, there was some legislation that went through in his administration.
And he brought that up, and I'm not really too sure I knew what he was talking about, a couple of things. And
well, it was during the Clinton administration, Juanita, that banks suddenly became deregulated so that they could sell stocks and bonds, they could sell IRAs, and they could sell television sets and cell phones, and they could sell any, a bank could sell anything it wanted to. Instead of being a bank.
And they can charge your late fees if you're 2 minutes late with your payment.
Exactly. But that was, you know, that's not the sole cause of all of this.
And Cenk Uygur, you know, he said that he had a card one time, and he said he seemed like he was paying on it every time he turned around. And he called them, and they were going on, I think, 18 days instead of, a monthly.
Right.
They were going by 18 days, so he said he got rid of that one.
Well, I found that the best way is to just not have them.
I know. You know, I'm getting sick of them. Because people like me, we don't get very high on them, you know. And then...
Oh, there was a time, Juanita, when I had a wallet full of them. But Agnes and I
share too.
Agnes and I had a one of those marital heart to hearts, and we ditched him. And it's, you know, it makes things a little bit more difficult. If you can't buy it, don't get it.
There was one that they sent to my son, and they were offering me either $200 or $300. And by the time they took out the yearly charges and the filing charges and a monthly charge, whatever, he had like $23 credit. And he didn't ask for that, so he had to get hot with them, you know, to get them taken off. And he finally got a letter, you know, saying they had taken him off because he didn't even ask for it. But imagine that, $23, and then you're already in debt. And then that $23, you're going to have to pay late fees or over your limit fee. And those fees are high. And some of them charge like $35.
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, Juanita, you've got things going. The phones are blinking away, so.
Anyway, that was, anybody gets a chance to see it, I'm sure some of them on YouTube.
Right.
And, anyway, I'm looking forward to the,
One of the stories you sent me, over the weekend, I have got to find time for. About the ice. Oh my God.
I know it.
FEMA has now decided that hurricane victims no longer deserve ice.
And you know, I remember watching Brownie when he was being questioned by the Congress and him saying, I just don't understand why they want ice. Oh boy. That to me.
I mean, can't they drink their liquor neat? Golly Moses. Well, Juanita, thank you for sending that along, and I will try to get
article.
To it. Okay. Yes, indeed. Take care.
You too.
All right. Bye now. All right. Juanita's got us off to a roaring start. Let's see what's going on here. Oh. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, brother.
Hey, what's up, Albert?
Mister, we could sure use a man like Herbert Hoover
again.
Yeah.
You and me are tapping into the same corner of the universe because that just ran through my little skull earlier this weekend.
That song has been in my head for weeks. Just that same, Mr. We can use a man like Herbert Hoover again. And then, of course, you scream. But other than that, that's exactly what the hell's going on. And you know how long we've been saying this crap that's coming. How long? This, Bob, I am outraged. This is an outrage. This is an outrage of outrages. This is the biggest pile of excrement I've ever seen or even imagined possible. This is unbelievable. This is so unbelievable. You and I cannot even declare goddamn bankruptcy.
Nope.
But these bastards can sit here and do what they do and they get a $30 million, $40 million, $100 million, $1 billion severance pay. Are you kidding me? Bob, guillotines, just for a few of them.
Pitchforks and torches.
Just a couple of, no, we need to put the guillotine on top of Wall Street, pop a couple of their heads off, bronze them where they lay for all eternity, and then bronze the guillotine, and just so these guys in the future know. Like, wow, like, we have,
sort of like Pompeii, kind of the casts in Pompeii, that kind of thing. Here lies a traitor. Now, see, this, but really, this is kind of where I part company with you. I don't want a guillotine. I want tar and feathers. Because, you know, I would just as soon say, oh, he's calling for violence. See, those liberals are all violent. No, because see, tar and feathering actually takes some effort and it takes a group and nobody's going to, no. But, you know, if, that guy that ran Lehman Brothers into the ground, what was his name? Fuld? If they stripped him naked and doused him in hot tar and poured the feathers on him and put him on a rail and carried him out of Wall Street, it might straighten up that crowd a little bit.
No, it won't. Nothing will. Bob, how can it? Listen to the arrogance Listen to what, look at what they've done and look at what they're getting. Bob, I don't care what your medical problem is. You cannot declare bankruptcy anymore. This shit is gangsta. There is no more gangsta than this. This is the crime. It's happening now. Right now. This is it. This is, here we go. Here we go. We're over the roller coaster ride. Okay? This is the heist. This is part of it. This is, every time that any kind of economic downturn ever happens, it's always a readjustment of wealth from us to them. It always is. And then they put out some more chips and we play and we buy them and the chips keep getting cheaper. Right? Pennies ain't made of copper anymore.
Nickels ain't made of nickel.
Yeah, they ain't nothing. Exactly. Quarters will evaporate in a fire. Okay? And the dollar and the $1 bill is worth the same as a $100 bill. It's all illusion. All right? Now, we're sitting here Bob, we have to really, honestly, working people have to get this through their heads. You cannot declare bankruptcy anymore. Your credit cards, whatever, it doesn't matter what you do. You are going to be held liable for this debt forever. And pretty soon, they're going to pass laws where debt will accumulate to family lineage. They're going to completely reverse the estate death tax. And debt.
No, debtor's prison. Look, we, for all intents and purposes, Albert, we already have a return to debtor's prison. It's the American prison system. It's the stupid things that people do when they get into desperate financial straits. And it winds up getting them in, you know, let's say you're in a $5,000 hole to the payday lender.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to come up with $5,000 quick or, you know, you lose everything. So you go and you try to knock off a bank. And you get busted and you go to prison. How the hell is that not debtor's prison?
Nah, it is. But it's even so much as the term, you know, it's going to be debtor's prison because you're not even going to be able to buy gas. Okay. The only way you're going to ever travel anymore is going from work camp to work camp. Right? I mean, like seriously. I mean, honestly. They're already talking $1 trillion, Bob. They're just talking that. And I've even heard some dudes talking on Wall Street talking about like $3-4 trillion.
Oh, I know. That's the whole thing. When the Bush, in negotiating, if you want, say, $1,000, you ask for 10 and you settle for 1. You ask high and you accept low. But the Bush administration and all their cronies and all these pigs, this isn't a bear market. This is a pig market, okay? And their little cloven hooves are clattering down Wall Street. And the way they think is if you want $10 trillion, you start by asking for 1. Oh, wait a minute. We just crunched the numbers again. 1, well, we're going to have 3. Oh, damn. The calculator broke. That was actually 5. Wait a minute. Did we say 5? We meant 7.
Well, not only that, right? Look at that. Iraq is almost $1 trillion on its own. Then think about that. I'm sure you've seen the calculator.
Yes, I have.
Like
What more? Albert, what more do we have? we've lost our cars. We're losing our homes.
Yeah.
The poison milk is on the way. 53,000 Chinese babies are sick now, and it's been found in a Nestle product in Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm.
It's here.
Mm. Yes. And
how much? Frankly, this is a calculus, Albert, that my friends at Coal River Mountain Watch have been looking at for years. And that is, you know, every now and then you'll have some middle-of-the-roader come along and say, well, you know, we just have to sit both sides down at the table, the people who are opposed to mountaintop removal and the people and the coal companies, we have to sit down together at a table, and every side has to give a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what drives people, that drives crazy, just, because not only do we not have anything left to give, what we had in the first place has already been taken from us.
That's right.
See,
so you shouldn't worry about the mountain.
Yeah,
you're not.
But it applies on a broader spectrum, Albert. You know, our liquidity's been taken from us. Our savings have been taken from us. You'll note that this bailout plan is only happening now that millions of Americans have had their little retirement portfolios devalued.
Mm-hmm.
They've had their liquidity taken from them. They sucked all the money out of those that they could. Because remember, on Wall Street, the big boys never lose. Okay, whether it's Vegas, Atlantic City, some riverboat casino on the Ohio, or Wall Street, there is one rule that obtains: the house always wins.
Exactly. Where's the money go? If I put $1,000 cash money in there, okay, or $10 or $1 million, whatever it is, and I lose it, where does it go? It goes somewhere. It doesn't vanish. Where does it go? Into the kitty? There is no sewer. And even if there's a sewer, it always leads somewhere. Where does that money go? Nobody ever asked that. It doesn't vanish. It's there. Someone has it. It didn't just get up and walk away. Okay? Now, Bob, that's what I'm saying. You know, hey, buddy, we've been saying this for a while. And, you know, I hate to be conspiratorial, but, you know, just real quick, we need a jubilee. We do. You and I, working class people. We should be the ones be getting bailed out. These people lost their shirts. Oh, tough luck. SOL. You're out. Next.
No, I know. Look, I'm not banging my own personal little drum, but I do understand some of this stuff. It's been a bear since my father passed away to try to hang on to his house in Alabama. And it's got a little bit of debt on it, so it's not like I can sell it and make anything off of it. But I've been trying to keep the payments up, and so, you know, I'm on the verge of losing it. And you know what? Nobody's out there knocking on the door offering to, oh, really? Darn, that's too bad. Here, let us cover that for you.
Mm-hmm.
But by God, a Wall Street investment banker with mm-hmm. six or seven, you know, houses, you know, the McCain plan.
Yep.
The Bush administration and a significant percentage of the Congress are ready to what? Make mm-hmm. sure that he gets to hang on to all of them?
Yep.
God almighty. You know, Gary Trudeau, I don't know if you, do you follow Doonesbury at all? Gary Trudeau had a few brilliant panels in the past week or so about how the McCain campaign had to come up with a foreclosure on one of McCain's houses. So the, my friends, I feel your pain. Yeah. Well, Senator, do you know which house it is? No, not yet.
Oh God.
But I've been thinking about this all weekend long, Albert. There's a genius to all of this.
Mm-hmm.
Because America is so big that not only do we not feel the effects of a war that's crippled us in the Treasury, very few Americans have a stake in that war, or occupation, I should more properly say. Very few Americans have a stake in the occupations of Iraq or Afghanistan, not anything that they understand. They have we all have an internalized stake, or an externalized stake, depending on how you look at it. But we also, you know, if you live in one part of the country, you see some up for foreclosure signs in yards. But we're big enough that it doesn't become critical. And at this point in time, all this bailout business, you know what? As much as George Bush loves the Wall Street types, this ain't about them, Albert. This is about holding back the flood tides until January the 20th. And if we ever thought, if there was ever an inkling that Bush and Cheney were not going to leave, you can put that out of your head now, because the bags will be packed and they'll be out the door on January the 19th.
Paraguay, remember?
Paraguay, exactly, up by Bolivia.
Yeah, I mean, well, you and I have been talking about this, I mean, verbatim exactly, and, you know, I mean, you got to say, I mean, you know, sure, all right, I'm huffing the Oracle gases and stuff, but, I mean, come on, bud, this has been called. I mean, this is a bet we called. We need to get paid on it. And I think paid on it means, you know, maybe a little weight to what I'm about to say. You know, it is, certainly. It's all a stalling. It's not enough. I mean, the illusion is completely collapsing and unraveling. Okay, I mean, spitting bubblegum wads at a spring that's uncoiling out of a grandfather's clock isn't going to do anything. You know, just like that was a wonderful analogy earlier with the addicts. You know, letting go, hey, I know, you don't want to do this heroin anymore, so we're going to lock you in the room with an ounce of it. See you later.
Goodbye.
What?
Now, don't use that. Don't do that. Yeah.
Yeah, come on. Come on. You know, and you know how hard it is to quit smoking or anything else. I mean, you know, especially smoking. Forget it. I've been trying to quit smoking. I'm on 2.5 weeks, and, you know, it's tough right now. All I want to go do is go get a big fat punch cigar and just start inhaling it. And you know, I need some nicotine because this is ridiculous. And I think a lot of people aren't paying attention, man. I mean, they're sitting there. Oh, my God, Bob. It's like an iceberg. Seriously, this is bad. This is bad, bad, bad. I mean, this is bad. This is not good. I want everybody, you better start canning and whatever you can to do. You better get something, all right? Because in the worst case scenario, which we're headed for, you might as well at least be able to feed yourself with some pork and beans. Yams are real cheap right now, and they're quite nutritious. I mean, this is getting to a point, you know, like, yeah, it's good you don't have any credit cards. The offers are getting even better now. Notice this?
Yeah, they still show up in the mail. It's kind of like, yeah.
Yeah, but they're getting juicier. They're getting even better than they were in the heyday, right, in 2002, 2003. It's not 0% for 6 months. Now it's 0% for 2 years.
So Albert, I got on the phone today, and I called my two senators, and I called my congressman,
mm-hmm.
and said, you know, please don't get on board with this. Well, I didn't actually reach Rockefeller's office. Nobody reaches Rockefeller's office anymore. It's all voicemail. But that's because of a whole bunch of liberals who took to calling his office over several days saying, is this the number I dial for retroactive immunity for felonies? But I did what I could. And, you know, politically, I'll do what I can around here, even though the racism that was talked about in that study that came out in the last few days, what is it, one-third of registered Democrats say they have a problem voting for an African-American man, that they have a problem voting for someone because of their skin color.
Yeah.
Despite all that, I'm still, you know, that's not going to slow me down. I'm going to work. I'm going to do what I can around here. But
I'm not a registered Dem, so don't worry about that, Bob. That's just number baloney crap. That's Karl Rovian crap. They'll register themselves Democrats for that kind of crap.
But what I'm getting at is, so, you know, I'm here. I'm doing this. I've done the call your congressman thing. Mm-hmm. I'm going to try to do some local work.
Mm-hmm.
What else is there? I mean, see, that's the thing. This country, you know, this country doesn't do revolution. This country doesn't do rabble in arms. This country doesn't do pitchforks and torches.
Mm-hmm.
So all, you know, so necessarily all that the Bush administration wants to do is to keep talking about Sarah Palin. And I got a Sarah Palin story for this evening, but it's a real Sarah Palin story.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, let me just get into that real quick if you don't care. There's a story that's out on CNN today. It turns out that Sarah Palin's administration there in Mousilla, Alaska, or where the heck ever, was one of very, very few communities, and I find this stunning, where... Still there?
Yeah, I'm here, bud.
Oh, okay. Nasty little beep.
Say hi to the NSA.
Oh, okay. Yeah, hi, Agent Fred. But it, one of the few cities, towns, where rape victims were compelled to pay up to $1,000 for the rape examination. Can you imagine that?
Oh, my God.
This was on her watch.
Oh.
This was when she was being a proven leader. A rape victim had to pay for her rape examination. But really, it's a But isn't that, if you think about it, isn't that a metaphor for what's going on now?
Oh, yeah, totally.
Aren't we being asked to pay the burglar for breaking into our house? Isn't that what this Wall Street bailout is?
Bob, this is like being raped, okay? This is like being gang raped.
Well, okay? I hesitate to go there because...
It is. Even if the steam is released very gently, it is. This is what this is. And now we're going to pay for the doctor's visits for the rash these guys have. The friction rash. This is what this is. Make no mistake about it. That's what it is. That's where we're sitting. Rape kits are... They're making... Handmaid's Tale.
I mean... Handmaid's Tale. I know. But, and I know I've said this before, Albert, and maybe this is turning into a broken record, but there's still a little bit of me that gapes in wide-eyed wonder at the willingness of these asses to make complete and total hypocrites of themselves.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the free market. Oh, we got to have the free market. Free market's everything. You know, if you're not the free market, you're communist. You can't be communist. That might be socialism. No one said, got to have free market. Help me, taxpayers, please. Well, what about that free market? That's okay. We'll go back to the free market after I'm all right.
Yeah. No, you're right. No doubt about
and
it.
And it pisses me off to no end.
Bob, I'm at 193 degrees right now. That's my temperature. I'm boiling, bud. I mean, we're sitting here looking at the biggest hypocrites in the planet Earth ever. Okay? How dare they ask for a handout from the government? How dare they? I mean, how can we sit here and listen to the trite and crap that these people talk about, welfare queens and all this other junk, and then they can sit here and do this? You ever think that maybe, the blood that we never feed the Tree of Liberty should be theirs? And I ain't even talking guillotine, whatever. I'm not even talking like that. I'm talking about just let them fall to the ground. Let them vanish.
Well, and that's the question. What happens if Wall Street goes in the tank?
Good.
No, realistically, this is the real question. What happens? What really happens to America if these investment banks go the way of all flesh?
Good.
But what happens to America?
What happens to America? We have to start all over again.
I mean, are we talking about a full-on crash? Are we talking about the total meltdown, atonal music, $1,400 six-packs of Budweiser, all that? Is that what we're talking about?
We're already talking about that. That's what we're talking about now. But except the fact that these people will be in their fiddler greens, okay? They'll be fiddling on the green while we are all on the bottom. I'd be like, watch the Romero zombie movies, right? They're symbolic for more than just, zombies, okay? That's what it is now. That's what it is. Yeah, they pay the cops. Oh, yeah, and the cops are the overseers. We're in a slave. You don't have to go to prison to be a slave. You don't have to be locked into a fence thing to be in a concentration camp. I'm serious. We are in dire.
Well, when they said that Lehman was going south, Lehman Brothers. What'd they say? There are 80,000 employees.
Yeah, Bob, I was one of them at Morgan Stanley. Okay.
Okay.
I can't believe that has. Now it's a bank. Need to be a teller. I'm serious. This is Bob. Plus, Wall Street. Listen, bud, these guys make, we just heard about McCain's little boyfriend there making $30,000 a month to lobby for Fannie Mae, right?
Yeah.
$30,000 a month for stocks, for stock brokers and stuff is nothing. You suck if you're making $30,000 a month. You suck. You understand? Like, seriously. If these people don't have something to sit back on, forget it. You talk about Darwinism and the survival of the fittest, forget it. If you can sit there and make the kind of money that these kinds of people make, okay? And you don't, and if all of a sudden it collapsed and we have to start all over, they would still be sitting better than any of you would ever be sitting in your entire family lineage. They have more money. And this is why I laugh when people talk, they idealize rich people, they talk about Fortune Forbes. Man, these people got no concept in terms of what kind of money.
Yeah, but okay, I'm not trying to be argumentative. I really am trying to pursue an understanding here. What happens to the guy and the woman who work the 15th to 19th floors, cleaning up the broker's trash, emptying the garbage, doing the windows? What happens to them? Because they ain't doing no $30,000 a month.
No, they're not. And the thing is those people. I mean, those people are cattle. I mean, they're cattle. Literally, you're cattle.
Not to me, not to you, but to the sure.
No, we're cattle. I mean, you know, to you and I, you know, no, sure, if we're cows, we're cows. That's fine. However, to them, that's what we are. We're feeders, Bob. When the bottom comes out, who's going to feed us? Who's going to pay for it? They're not going to pay. They don't even want to pay for their own mistakes. They're going to pay for ours. I mean, come on.
I mean, I've got some real cognitive dissonance going on right now. That's born of all this free market malarkey. The free market was good, the free market is good. if the free market is the solution to all problems, then it would seem that the free market is trying to is to the extent that it's even real, is trying to remedy some incredibly bad behavior on the part of Wall Street. If that's true, then let the free market work. Let these sons of go in the bag. Let them go down the drain. Let them go in the tank. Whatever metaphor you choose, let the free market work. They touted it. They crowed it. Let it work for them. I mean, I know it sounds childish and immature and unthoughtful and uninformed and unintelligent, but you know what? I don't have anything remotely resembling the physical experience that brought on the spirit that caused the words to be uttered. But in 1965, folks stood in Watts and said, "Burn, baby, burn!" And you know what? That's what I'm feeling about Wall Street right now.
Oh yeah, me too. And that's the thing that, I mean, for example, we pay taxes, right? We pay taxes, right? And they do everything they can to not pay taxes, right? Even going as far as, remember when they talked about how they were going to give all these banks, all these companies, they were going to give them all these aid, right? And they were just going to be U.S. companies. 10 minutes later, they're like, oh, no, it's going to be even, you know, the countries that don't have their headquarters here. Oh, that's for anybody. Now, you know, not for nothing. But if I own a corporation, okay, I live in this country, right, the greatest country in the world, stars and stripes forever. I live in this country. I make $100 million a year, okay? And I should be paying, right, if I make $100 million, I should be paying half of that. Shouldn't you? I mean, come on. $100 million, you can't pay $50 million? You can't live on $50 million? You can't live on $50 million a year?
Have you seen the electric bill for running 15 houses? You're just out. You're out of touch, Al.
I know.
Have you seen the price of a Waterford Crystal garden watering can? They're outrageous. I mean, a few years ago, that jerk that got tried for it, you know, he was giving up $15,000 for a shower curtain. They're 20 now.
Yep. Have you seen what they're charging for first class? It's a disgrace, right? No, wrong. We pay taxes, okay? If anything, taxes are like, it's the budget for the house, right? And if the house is the country, and taxes are the budget for the house, and that budget goes to paving roads and paying and taking care of schools, it should also go for health care, but it also in terms of when we get raped, as with this subprime crap. I mean, come on, man. It's like, what they're doing is like putting $10,000 on the street. If I took $10,000, put it on the street, went up in a building, and shot everybody that went to grab it. Okay? That's like hunting, like bear hunting. You know, the tough guys will go hunt bear, you know, and they do that, and they take 50 pounds of shrimp. You know, that's what this is like. These subprime guys sit there, and they tell you, hey, instead of paying $3,600 a month for this house, you can pay $800. People go, who wouldn't say, oh, damn.
But what I'm trying to sort out here, this is all this is all very visceral, Albert, and it is very real.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm trying to sort out here, because I only, you know, I only had parents and grandparents to tell me the stories of the Great Depression. What I'm trying to sort out here is if by some miracle we can stop this, and frankly, let's be honest, it's looking less and less like anything's going to be stopped. What we're going to hear in the future as a result of it, well, you know, we can't have any health care for everybody because we're busy paying for Wall Street and the two occupations. I mean, you know, obviously, I mean, that certainly does. And that is the Repiglican plan in motion. If you can't stop it frontally, you can stop it, you can stop it with a flank assault. And this is a flank assault. This bailout is a flank assault on the American people. It's a flank assault on our ability to send our kids to college. It's a flank assault on our ability to put food on our tables. It's a flank assault on our ability to be taken care of when we get sick. Okay? That's what it is. We're getting flanked again.
Yep.
And what I'm trying, I'm really, really earnest, and I invite anybody to call in and tell me what the answer to this question is. What does this nation look like when the crash comes? Because the thing is, I spent some time on the weekend. I read every article that came past my eyeballs about this bailout. All right? And as
it's 12 monkeys.
Yeah. So yeah. I've read all of that. I remember the stories my parents and grandparents told me. And I also read some history on the Great Depression.
Mm-hmm.
And this kind of baloney was done in 1929 as well. Mm-hmm. You know, it all didn't happen on October the 24th, 1929, and then, you know, bang, party's over, we're all broke.
Yeah.
The government sat there and finagled and fooled around and tried to fix and tried to yada, 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 and it still went south.
Mm-hmm.
So all this phony money, all this phony baloney money, It's good money. It's good money being thrown after bad. It's payment on a boat loan, because you know a boat's a hole in the water you throw money into.
Well, this is paying at a casino for free.
Right, because there ain't no such thing as free. So what I'm trying to sort out here, I mean, from the garden to learning to can to. Do you have enough to eat tonight? Do you have a warm place to sleep in the winter? What does America look like? Because, you know, once Wall Street dies, then, for instance, frankly, this program's in jeopardy. Okay? Because there's a domino effect. And once Wall Street cashes in its chips, then there goes Comcast. There goes Verizon. There goes AT&T, and everything scales. Everything scales down.
And we start over.
Now, I've got an email here, by the way. Got an email in from our pal, Kate. And she echoed what I was trying to say to you. She said, it is nothing like a rape, gang, or otherwise. Now, rape is just one of those things that I try not to use as a...
I understand.
Yeah.
Sorry, Kate.
But she references what I the piece that I read from David Foster Wallace. She says, reread the piece from the top. When you worship money and power, you will be unhappy and both will control you. Everything in the show so far is reflected in the address you read. And she says it's pronounced Wasilla, a very nice little town when she lived there. A mayor doesn't a town make. But, you know, that's the thing. This Palin creepy thing was...
Yeah.
At the helm when this was being done, you know, it charging women for the examinations for their rapes. Yeah. But apparently back when she lived there, there were some good mayors. And the guy that was the mayor before Sarah Palin was apparently a decent mayor. And she ran, by the way, she ran, we need to get Jesus back in the schools, all that crap. But she makes a very profound point and says, times are changing. We need to shift our attitudes. Where's your water? Where's your heat? Where's your food? Don't need pitchforks unless we use them to turn the compost and manure piles for next spring's crop. And I agree with that to a degree.
Yeah,
but
too.
The fact of the matter is, this is all grasshopper and the ant stuff. Okay? This is because what I'm getting at is that what I said earlier, the word enough does not exist in these people's vocabulary.
No.
And if we've got the water, and if we've got the heat, and if we've got the food, they'll come for that too.
Yeah.
And so it is a little bit about pitchforks.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not a survivalist. I'm not heading for the woods. You know, I'm not laying in a stock of shotgun shells or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. We got enough for you, buddy.
But it's worth thinking about what this, frankly, a contraction or a retool or a reset or a do-over or whatever you want to call it might be good for this country.
Yeah.
Might get people away from their television sets. Might get people talking to one another again.
Yep.
Because, one of the things that I find most interesting, Albert, is that out of all of this, you know, like I said, I read article after article after article after article. Well, guess what? When it came time to read the right-wing take on it, guess what I found? I'm going to read.
It's people's fault.
Well, this is Paul Weyrich. You know who that creep is? One of the fathers of the evangelical movement. You know the whole. Yeah.
Yep.
Judging from
what? Ready, buddy.
Yeah. Oh, really? Yeah, lucky you. Save mine for after.
There we go.
Yeah, a little lager.
Like that, huh?
He says, judging from what I can tell of the current financial and economic woes of the nation, I am beginning to believe that this presidential election may be a no-win proposition, and the loser might very well be the lucky one indeed. We always will have... because he's a right-wing fundy, he's gonna take this to a biblical place, and all the fundies will read the code on this. We always will have our economic downturns. Well, what did Jesus say? Jesus said, "The poor ye have always with you." Yeah, we're always going to have our economic downturns. They basically are now. Wait, see, this is the right wing approach. Remember, they basically are cyclical, and we've suffered through many since World War II. There's simply no way of getting away from them. Not our fault. We didn't do this. No, this.
I just want to cry.
Our current situation, however, is quite different. This time, the difficulties are not a few in numbers, but entail a rather long list. Neither are they simplistic, but instead very complex, and I believe that they will take quite a long time, perhaps even a decade, to resolve. Instead of looking at recession, we might very well be looking at a complete economic meltdown more global in nature rather than national, something that most of us have never seen. Do you hear the hidden excuses? You know, these things just happen. Look, it's the global warming approach to economics. This, you know, global warming, Sarah Palin says global warming's not man-made. Well, guess what? Neither's this Wall Street meltdown. This had nothing to do with out-of-control Wall Street investment bankers. No, these things just happen.
Yeah. Oh, it's God's will that now whatever money we have left we give to these guys so they don't live in, you know, destitution. You know, it reminds me, you know, I often think in pictures and what you're reading and like what you're, in terms of what you're reading from that just parasitic bastard. Anyway, the kinds of things that he's saying reminds me of that little picture. I don't know if you've ever seen it. You know, those little motivational posters. Now they're so much better because the internet's gotten a hold of it and consciousness has tweaked them. There's a picture of the Pope in his little Mercedes Pope mobile with his 15 inches of bulletproof glass. And it says, "The bullets are real. Your God is not." And I just love that. I was just seeing that in my head as this guy sitting here trying to say, "Oh, this is what happens. That's like."
Well, wait, you enjoyed this so much. I got to share a little bit more with you.
All right. You're such a sadist.
Well, no. Hey, all we got in common is our misery, and the least we can do is share it. Neither presidential candidate, you will note, has done much talking about any of this, either because he doesn't have an answer, doesn't want to give us the answers because this may only turn off voters in the midst of a race for the nation's highest office, or is simply afraid of panicking the nation, thereby adding fuel to the fire. All reasons have some validity.
Well, he he's a right-wing freak. He's always watching his Fox, and obviously Fox is paying. I mean, you're not for nothing.
This isn't just a freak. This is one of the gods of the movement. Paul Weyrich.
You know.
But see, this is in the same vein as those people who say, well, conservatism's still what America needs. It's just that it turned out that George Bush weren't really a conservative.
Yeah, right. That's such pornography. Like seriously, like that's only a few notches above some of the most horrible things.
But these bastards never give up. These bastards never give up, Albert. Wait, there's more. This whole thing is one long Ginsu commercial.
Can I just say what did he say at the beginning of that last little piece you wrote? What did he say?
Neither presidential candidate, you will note, has done much talking about any of this.
Yeah, I got to get that tattooed on my forehead. Go ahead.
Okay, so wait, though. This is exactly what I just said. We need a conservative solution, all right? Remember? But they're supposed to be the free market people. Never mind. He says,
my chair.
Yeah. He says, put simply, there is no free ride in this world. I had the same response. I had to look the other way real quick, or I would have sprayed iced tea all over the. It would have been a spit take all over the monitor. You know, there's no free ride in this world, and government at all levels, not only in Washington, has failed to understand this. Who's government? Who's in power? Of course, he doesn't. He's lost his memory. Who am I? What? Where? Huh? Whoever wins this election had better be prepared to show some real leadership. Wait till you see what the leadership entails. And be willing to take strong action immediately to save the nation from what could be tantamount to a catastrophe. Okay, here's how the next president has to save the nation, Albert. You're going to love this. Swallow, okay? Swallow first.
All right.
I don't want anything sprayed anywhere.
Hang on. Let me get ready. Honestly, because after what this clown has said already, I don't know if I'm going to be able to go. I'm going to put mute, okay? Just go.
A good place to begin, I believe, would be freezing the federal budget and begin working towards some deep cuts and reprioritizing expenses in favor of the nation's infrastructure, balancing our federal budget and making some headway against an out-of-control national debt or an absolute must. You can unmute anytime. I know. It's a real challenge sometimes just to keep from putting on that little whole Doppler effect of me running screaming around the room. You know what I mean?
Honestly, I do. I'm going to get a 7.1 for that because that's important. Why don't we just listen to them? They know what they're talking about.
Yeah. Freeze the federal budget and begin deep cuts. Where are the deep cuts going to happen? Are the deep cuts going to happen, in the Pentagon, Paul Weyrich, you evangelical right-wing horse's ass? Are they going to happen in the Pentagon? You and me, Albert, quick. Let's bet. Are they going to happen in the Pentagon?
I don't know. You know, that's rhetorical. I mean, come on.
They're not going to happen in the Pentagon. Are they gonna? If we've frozen the budget and we're slashing, well, we can't impose any sort of regulatory system on Wall Street. So that's out the window. Okay, can't do that. The reinvest in America's infrastructure. Where do you reckon Paul Weyrich wants to spend that infrastructure? Well, I'm sure that the next column will explain that we're going to reinvigorate America's infrastructure by tax cuts.
Tax cuts, and then like. Only pave the roads to the churches. Yeah.
Yeah. We're reprioritizing in favor of the nation's infrastructure. Whatever the hell that means, what it actually translates to is we're finally going to kill Social Security. God knows we've been trying for nearly 80 years, but we're going to get it. We're going to finally do it.
Bobby wants to be the Pope.
Then you bastards are on your own. Ha!
No, then you need us, because we'll be the new Vatican. That's their fantasy. They want that power. You know that. Come on, you know that. That's what they want. They want to kill Social Security so you have to rely on their charity. Yeah, this is the...
Aren't they evil?
Seriously. And it's so... I'm going to drop a couple bombs here. Hang on. Hang on. 1 second. Just give me 1 second.
Okay. Let's see. Jeopardy theme.
Hello. Yeah, I'm sorry, bud. I had to scream. I really did have to scream. This is so transparent. This is like peanut butter and jelly does not need instructions, people. What is this? This is so freaking... Sorry.
Yeah, I know. Our buddy Reverbo has chimed in. You want to see why we're hosed and why they seem to have no serious interest in stopping the war?
Mm-hmm.
Take a look at the portfolios of our elected officials. They're invested up to their fat necks in the companies that need a bailout and up to their fat necks in companies that profit from blood.
Well, they love blood so much we should almost, you know, huh? I don't care the NSA is listening. Guillotines. That's all I'm going to say. We need some guillotines. Just a couple. I mean, I would love to be able to say no to that, and I'd love to be able to be so, oh, man, I would love to pay. I'd rather do that, but I don't think it would be effective. You know, I mean, if you notice, it was a seventh generations box, right? Seven generations. And I am Iroquois Indian. That's part of me, and it's Iroquois. And I really do like that little saying that, you know, anything that we could talk about today, we should also take into account seven generations into the future. You see, that's something that nobody does in this culture. And that's why, you know, in a sense, you know, I know this is going to sound crazy, but you know what? This is, in a sense, this is part of that thing that, you know, when they talk about American infidels and all this other crap around the world, this is what they're talking about. Okay, that like we don't plan. We're all worried about saying we don't think we're going to be rock stars and movie and billionaires and just like, you know, we live vicariously through these people. Okay, but at the same time, like, we're literally eating our children. We're eating them. This is, like, forget rape. This is cannibalism. That's what this is. This is Easter Island. You know what I'm saying about that, right?
Yeah, this is Rapa Nui.
Easter Island. Yeah. There are no more trees left. There's no more food left. You know? I mean, come on. You know, I mean, and you know how I am with consciousness and everything else like that, but the reason I'm feeling the way I am right now is like, this is like, I'm trying to ring a bell in the hearts of people. And, you know, when we sit here listening to where we are right now, okay, man, this is September. It's the end of September. Like, we haven't forgotten what time it is, have we? Have we forgotten what time it is and what's going on?
Let's get the magic eight balls and the moon and stars robes out, Albert. When the buyout goes through, because the buyout's going to go through.
Yeah.
When the buyout goes through, what's the market going to do?
Well, it's, what is it, down 500?
Yeah, everything. Yeah, all those gains after the last buyout was announced, they're gone.
You know, we all watch war movies. You know, they try to make war movies really realistic. And every time the hero gets the sucking chest wound, there's only so many bandages you can put on. How many buyouts have we already had?
Well,
you cannot. I mean, literally, just like you can't cure heroin addiction by you know, just because you can't cure heroin addiction by giving a guy heroin, you can't, unless you want to overdose him. Ah! Are you going to overdose him? I hope people's hearts are listening. Okay? Because you're going to have to do something. I mean, we're all going to have to do something. And you know it's going to go through, but I'll tell you what. And I hope the conventional wisdom is correct. And I believe it is. I really don't see McCain. I just can't see him. And I'm talking about the same vision that sees where we are right now is talking right now. I don't see McCain. I don't. And that right-wing freak is correct. Man, he's going to win, but it's going to suck. It's going to be like, Well.
Well, that's the. I didn't read you the last part.
Oh, is it better? Is it more?
Yeah.
There, I can pay attention.
Okay, let's pick up where we left off. There must be a return to sound fiscal policy. A return? See, I've read this three or four times, so I wouldn't scream.
Ooh.
The idea of a Republican talking about a sound fiscal policy when these are the bastards who are responsible for it in the first place, you know. But here's the kicker. This is the punchline.
Go ahead.
And you gotta get all stentorian and authoritative and, you know, oh, glory and all. The battle hymn of the Republic in the background. Can you hum the battle hymn of the Republic for me while I do this? It's very short, Albert. Realizing that this could be political suicide for the new president, I can only say that he most likely will go down in history as the one who saved the nation. Yeah, I know.
What?
So between that and the American Family Association, they've issued their voter issue guide, by the way. Let's.
My father.
Hey, Albert, I'm gonna roll on. I'll go through this list. I got to get another call coming in here.
All right, absolutely, brother. All right, man. You take care.
All right, easy on the screaming. It's hard on the throat, man.
Sorry, buddy.
All right,
buddy.
Later.
Later.
Bye. Albert calling from America's Dairyland, Wisconsin. I'm going to go onto the phones. I hate to keep up people waiting. But remind me, AFA voter issue guide, okay? Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. This is Alan.
Hey, Alan. How are you?
Pretty good. I'm down here in Hilton Head. Watching alligators swim by.
Are they looking for a bailout too?
I guess.
Well, I mean, they're kissing cousins on Wall Street are, so I don't know.
Yeah, they get their mouth all open for our tax money.
Yeah.
Well, I'm looking here at some pamphlets by Puma.
Oh God.
They got their talking points. So I told this lady who's trying to convince me of this stuff that I'm going to do some research on it. So,
you know, just the other day, I think it was Saturday, Agnes and I were out, had to run an errand. You know, we tried to get all our errands done in one fell swoop because of the gasoline prices. And we were toddling down the road, and we passed a woman. Well, I didn't know she was a woman at the time, but we passed a car that had three stickers on the back. The first one said, Christian and Democrat. The second one said, Hillary. And the third one said, McCain.
Oh, man. I just don't understand. It's just trying to convince me that McCain was against FISA. Is that true? Can't be true.
No, it's not true. He didn't even show up to vote on it.
Yeah, and really, he didn't show up to vote on it.
No, he didn't show up for the vote. He hid.
Oh, okay. And the second one says, end in the Iraq War. Well, we know what McCain says on that. He says it's a 100-year war.
Yeah, doesn't bother him if we're there for 100 years.
Okay, the third one down says public financing. It says yes for Obama and no. I don't know. Well, how does McCain say on public financing?
Well, you know, he was co-author of the McCain-Feingold the campaign fine, and it was nothing. And a lot of it got gutted by the Supreme Court anyway. But you know, he's a maverick because he wanted to institute. It's a bunch of bull. Barack Obama has affirmatively come out, however, and advocated for public financing of political campaigns.
And NAFTA, what does Obama say about NAFTA?
He has said in the past that he would be in favor of renegotiating it.
Okay. And I imagine McCain really loves it, huh?
He was part of it.
Yeah. See, I think it's a party is what counts. We get a bomber in there. It's a party. I mean, it's the people underneath who's pushing the Democrat Obama.
Yeah. Well, we have to provide the intellectual and spiritual energy to make whatever he does doable. And if he's elected, he's coming into a hell of a mess. You know, a Democrat, but we should bear in mind, contrary to what that evangelical freak Paul Weyrich wrote, every time a Democrat comes into office following a Republican, he has a hell of a time because there's always a mess to clean up. You know, FDR had Harding, Coolidge, and Hoover to clean up after. Clinton had Reagan and Bush to clean up after. And yeah, Barack Obama yeah. will, and frankly, I know it's not in it's not in vogue to say it, but JFK had Eisenhower to clean up after. Because the Republican Party will always engage in a certain amount of cronyism, a certain amount of old boyism, and a certain amount of, you know, just nasty pro-wealth politics. Every Democratic president has a hell of a mess to clean up, but it's just looking like it's going to be worse this time through.
Well, Bob, did you know that Farrakhan is going in prisons trying to get people to vote for Obama? That's one of the talking points.
Oh, I Peter Godbold mentioned that the other night on Strictly Confidential, the big foo-frah that's going on in Alabama because someone's trying to... And Peter did a very good job of pointing out that not everybody who is incarcerated has been convicted. Not everybody who is incarcerated has lost their right to vote.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Because until you've been convicted of a felony, you haven't lost your voting rights. So there's somebody in Alabama who has a drive going on to register voters who are incarcerated, and it is causing an absolute uproar in that state.
Yeah. If you've been convicted in Alabama, you can't vote.
No. But there are lots of people in prison who have not been convicted.
Okay. What about the death penalty? Obama's against the death penalty, I guess.
Well, you know, he came out and disagreed with the Supreme Court rule or the court ruling that said that you can't the overturning of the Louisiana law that would have imposed the death penalty for child rape cases. He said he was opposed to that decision. That executing kitty rapists is fine by him.
And the abortion issue—that's something that's...
Well, they've made it. The abortion issue is a non-issue. The only reason the abortion issue ever raises its dirty little head in a campaign is because that is the one issue that'll bring these evangelical, fundamentalist, strychnine-drinking, snake-handling, floor-rolling, the tongue-speaking freaks out from behind the baseboards to get to the polling places. It's the only thing that motivates them, so there's always an abortion issue.
Yeah, well, this pamphlet here says that it's pro-abortion, but nobody's for abortion.
No, that's crazy talk. It is, however, not unreasonable to believe that such a decision as that is best left in the hands of a woman and her doctor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just their typical way of wanting to get in everybody's life.
Sure. And if you study the Republicans, Alan, what you'll find over time is that they never seek to pass a law that will stop any of their conduct. They're always worried about somebody else's. Stop them over there. It's never stop me. It's always stop them over there from doing that I object to.
Uh-huh.
It's part of what makes them such profound hypocrites.
And also said something about the town hall meetings that Obama is not for.
Oh, the town hall meetings versus debates. No. Why? If you were Barack Obama, you wouldn't be for town hall meetings either. You want a chance. You want a chance to absolutely whip the rear end off of John McCain in a debate. I mean, witness the fact that they already dummied up the rules for the vice presidential debate. So Sarah Palin doesn't have to display her profound stupidity and ignorance.
Yeah, and also I remember the debate or whatever it was in that church. I can't remember that church where.
Oh, the Saddleback thing with Rick Warren. Yeah.
They switched the questions on Obama. That's what happened, wasn't it? They switched the questions when he got there.
I'm not aware of that part of it, but I do know that John McCain was supposed to be in a soundproof booth, and he wasn't even on the premises for the first half hour.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, that thing was a fraud, but it was put up by by Rick Warren, who is, of course, a gospel sharp and a big old phony. So I didn't expect it to be anything other than a fraud.
Yeah, I do believe they switched the questions on them. That's one of the issues they're using against Obama, I guess really ridiculous, is they put Sarah Palin's baby up on eBay. They started saying Obama's crew did that. I mean, that's pretty low down to say something like that.
Well, how are you going to do that, though? I mean, that was a smart alecky thing that was put up on eBay for satirical purposes.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I've got a lot of research to do, and if you got anything interesting to tell me about this issue, you.
Well, all I can tell you is if it came from a Puma person, it's not worth paying attention to because those people are categorically insane. Many of them are closet McCain advocates, if not open McCain advocates. Some of them, in order to shy away from what they actually are saying, well, you know, I'll vote for Cynthia McKinney. There's only two choices in this election. Actually, there's three.
Yeah.
There's three choices in this election. John McCain, Barack Obama, and stay the hell home.
Yeah. Oh, man.
And frankly, because he's a Repiglican, John McHoover benefits from stay the hell home. Republicans always seek to have low voter turnout because low voter turnout benefits them. High voter turnout benefits Democrats.
Yes, makes me think of this audio file that Tom Hartman plays occasionally on his radio program. Some guy saying that in the church. He said they want the attendance low at voting turnouts.
And the stories are already coming out there if you follow them. Bradblog.com, our friend Brad Friedman is a real eagle-eyed Boy Scout on this. If you want to follow it, and I suggest that we all do, he's a great clearinghouse for the shenanigans that are going on. And the vote fraud, the vote suppression, the election fraud, not voter fraud, election fraud is already well underway. And it's underway, of course, in the so-called key battleground states. I mean, you've got the Republican, the chairman of the Bernalillo County, New Mexico Repiglican Committee, who came out over the weekend and said, well, Hispanic Americans will not vote for an African American because Hispanics think they're better than blacks. And that's got the state of New Mexico in such an uproar that even the state Republican party chairman has called for the guy to resign.
Gee. Well, it seems like what happens every time an election comes along that we forget about the issues and just start talking, just start saying bad things about people.
Well, right, because, and Bart Kopp at BartKopp.com pointed that out today. This was all born, and he was referencing a Sunday strip by Gary Trudeau, Doonesbury, that pointed out that this hate politics, this politics of destruction, this politics of attack, was ratcheted up and refined to a new level of sleaziness and just vileness by Newt Gingrich. You know, it was his memo that said, you know, refer to your opponent, and Trudeau quotes some of it in the strip. If you go to Bart Cop, you'll see it toward the bottom of the page. You refer to your opponent as sick. You refer to your opponent as sleazy. You deliberately don't call him a Democrat. Don't mention the Democratic Party. You call it the Democrat Party so that you can emphasize the word rat.
Yeah. Well, I get this prediction of what might happen is they might steal another election. Things will get so bad that people will protest, and then McCain will have to leave office. And then we'll get Obama in there because he's the one who actually wins the election.
No, I respectfully disagree, Alan. If McCain gets in, you get McCain, or eventually you get Palin, okay?
Mm-hmm.
There's no way that if McCain wins, you get Obama. And I honestly don't think Obama will run again if he doesn't get it this time. I don't think he'll run again in 12.
Oh, I think McCain, he seems like he's out in left field. I mean,
he's wicked. He's old. He's wicked. He's a liar. He is the worst kind of Machiavellian politician, Alan. And he will say or do anything to get elected.
He's like Ronald Reagan in his last days. It just didn't seem like he's there.
Yeah, he's Ronald Reagan in his last days, but he's already there before he's even sworn in.
It's really, really strange. Yeah. Well, I got to do a lot of research, or hopefully, maybe I'll just say I'm going to vote for McCain just to get this lady shut up.
No. Just
hard to do.
No, what you do is just ignore her. If she wants to start talking that Puma nonsense, say, you know, lady, we'll talk about the weather, but I'm not going to listen to your Puma insanity anymore, because I know the facts, and then there's what you're doing.
Yeah. She just kept on saying that he's evil. He's evil. And I said, tell me why he's evil. Don't use George Bush's words. I'm in one of those situations where...
Who, Barack Obama is evil? Is that what she was saying?
Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
I said, get past this evil and let's just talk about the issues. So then she starts talking about somebody's baby, Palin's baby, being put on eBay. I said, what's that have to do with $9 trillion of debt from Republicans? Well, I'm glad her husband's on my side.
Well, that helps then. That helps. Alan, good to hear from you. Hope you're enjoying yourself in Hilton Head. It sounds like a pretty nice place to be.
Yeah, it's a nice place to be. I think I'm going to walk on the beach or something tomorrow, get my mind off this stuff.
That is that is very, very good advice to yourself, and it's darn good therapy.
Okay.
All right, you take care, Alan. All right, good hearing from you.
Bye.
Bye now.
Thanks. Bye.
Alan, the former trucker, calling from Hilton Head Island, South Carolina. And daggum, yeah, it's beautiful. And speaking of South Carolina, had a bit of correspondence from our buddy David down in South Carolina a little bit ago. He said, you know, it's disgusting how the free market politicians rush to propose billions for billionaires. They don't have time or money for wasteful programs like children's health care, food stamps, unemployment, or, God forbid, health care for all of us. They aren't even going to raise the chips issue before recess. What a time to raise the chips issue. You know, one way to make this wall, because none of us can contemplate $1 trillion. Albert Einstein couldn't contemplate the meaning of $1 trillion. But one way to make it real is to talk about what that $1 trillion would do if we weren't throwing it down the Wall Street rat hole, and if we weren't throwing it down the Iraq and Afghanistan rat holes. You know what I mean? Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, what's up, Luke?
Oh, I tell you what, I on the way home tonight, I had to hear that damn McCain ad for where he goes after Obama for being friends with Reigns. You know, saying this man's part of the problem. I'm sitting there going, every time they do it, I want to see a picture of John McCain with Bill Graham over his shoulder.
Yeah, no kidding.
Because I'm sitting there going, if
or who's this clown that was making $30,000 a month for lobbying for Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac?
Oh, but the beauty of it is, I think the way you really stick it to it is, if you use Graham, just to remind people, this is the man who made Enron possible. Remember, this is the man who made the mortgage crisis possible.
Yeah, this is
the godfather of deregulation. And this is John McCain's friend and special and financial advisor.
Well, exactly.
But you were talking though a minute ago. Have we heard anything recently on the Michigan front on voter? Are they still trying to say they're going to line up and throw all the people who've been foreclosed off the list now? Wasn't that what the Republican Party up in Michigan said? They were going to have people at all the stations.
Yeah, yeah,
foreclosed. Yeah. You're no longer a property owner. Like, you're the ones that broke it, so, you know.
Well, I know, and it's not even so much property owner. It's, you know, you no longer have a verified address, therefore your voter registration is not correct, therefore you're not entitled to vote. Evil.
Oh, I tell you, they're bringing evil to that new level. They're working on it every chance they can. Oh, I tell you what, it's one of those things I'm just... I like you said about the things. I'm just curious.
But I mean, you know, you're there in East Tennessee, Luke. Is anybody talking about this?
Not about that. I say right now, our biggest thing is we finally just got over the gas blow up. So, you know how that is. We've gone through 3 weeks of fun where our gas went from $3.50 a gallon to $5 a gallon, and it's back down to $3.50 a gallon. And today, of course, CNN was saying, there's a shortage of gas in the South. And I'm like, oh, you idiots.
Yeah, there was a run in Atlanta?
Yeah. Well, that's what happened to us last week. I mean, somebody went on the air, or I think somebody dropped the pill in for all the radio stations and the TV stations. There's a shortage. Next thing you know, there are people lined up every damn where you could look. You know, and like, say, everybody ran out of gas, and all of a sudden the price jumped up. Price jumped up here. At one point, so there were people selling gas at $4.99 a gallon. And there are a few people are going to remember that.
Well, I'm curious because I don't have the direct line. Well, I kind of do, but I haven't heard it yet. I want to hear what so-called conservative value voting Southerners are saying about this shipwreck, this train wreck, that guy that they put in office has created.
Oh, I tell you can't get him to admit. Oh no, nothing. You know, it's like I saw something today where someone was writing about, I think, over at Common Dreams, said, "You watch it." Said, you know, for the next 6 weeks, you're going to hear the conservatives all crying. Well, it wasn't the fact that Bush was in office; he was the wrong person.
Yeah,
that's person in office.
Right. We still need conservative principles to solve this problem.
More tax cuts. You know, and he just wasn't the right person. He wasn't neocon enough for you. What part of the Constitution didn't he burn for you? You know.
Well, exactly, and to what? And this really is, Luke. It's a bit of a moral dilemma for me. To what extent do I get to look at the people who put Bush in office and say, "Are you happy now? Is how much more does America have to suffer before you're satisfied?"
I still hope in the last 2 weeks, I hope they start running that, you know, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? Are you better off now than you were 8 years ago? So look in the mirror, folks.
But what I'm curious about, Luke, is what will so-called conservative value voters, what excuse will they use to justify?
We have to vote for God.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I hear he may have 10 houses, but I bet he's got a flag in every one of them.
Well, you saw the one today. I always go to the CNN site just to see what Cafferty's questions are.
Yeah.
And one of them was, is it important the fact that how many cars John McCain owns? And like John McCain and his wife had 13 cars. Barack Obama and his wife have one.
Yeah, but see, that shows that John McCain cares about the world economy because he buys cars from all over the planet.
Yeah, well, they said he has two foreign-made cars. You know, he wasn't going to get in, but you know, he's kind of claiming, you know, those I just wonder when they're going to start claiming, well, that was the son's car. That, you know, that's registered under John's name for my son. You know,
yeah, because we get that insurance group discount policy, and you know how expensive insurance is these days.
Well, Pat Buchanan years ago? Was it the BMW?
Yeah.
He buys America, they found out he had a BMW, one of his cars.
Well, that's kind of like Lou Dobbs hollering about immigrants and having undocumented workers.
I've got the part with Lou. It's like, you tell Lou is in the tank. For John, I tell you who else is in the tank. Do you see the thing today? I meant to send it, and I forgot to. Was the thing about Mark Halperin?
No.
Where Mark Halperin has, on whatever side he's on, he does his weekly winner and loser. You know, this past week he said John McCain won.
How? Under what set of circumstances? How much peyote do you have to eat to get there?
Well, you know, it's one of those things. If you listen to him now when he's on the air, you know, he's one of those people, he's like, to me, he's like Gregory. You know what I mean? You listen to David Gregory, just remember, this is a man who loves to listen to Rush every day.
Yeah.
So just remember where he's getting his ideas. And Halperin's the same way. If you listen to Halperin, by the time it's done, amazingly enough, Republicans had nothing to do with that deregulation. We don't care what your memory shows, what those videotapes shows. No. Had nothing to do with that.
You know, if you're paying attention to polls, I guess it's a good thing. It would appear that John McCain's Sarah Palin-induced baby bump is over with. And Obama is climbing again. But still, they've got, you know, the goal is to keep it there within those 6 percentage points, because that'll be enough for the racists and the bigots and the haters to swing the election.
Well, I'm just wondering when she does this sit down with Katie Couric, we'll know how it goes by before the end of the story if we start seeing signs that Katie Couric was sexist towards her. You know?
Yeah.
I love the one last week. What was it? Tina Fey was sexist about her when she did that comedy routine. It's like,
oh yeah, and there's, yeah. And the big Fox flap this morning. This stuff just makes me crazy.
Alec Baldwin, I bet, was in the crosshairs this morning.
No, it was Steve Doocy having a hissy about alleging Al Franken, a candidate for federal offices, he wrote that skit where they targeted John McCain on Saturday night. How dare he? There's got to be a law. There's no way that's legal for a federal office candidate to write. NBC's gone completely in the tank for Obama now.
Oh, I tell you, it's one of those things. Every time you see, you just kinda, your mind just kind of goes, you know. We were talking one time about it's okay if you're a Republican. Well, we see the thing now where Sarah says that if she's elected as part of the thing, that hubby's going to sit in on her briefings. And somebody put it in the thing and said, you do realize there are laws against that. He can't sit in on high security briefings. She was saying, no, he's going to sit in on all the briefings. So I'm sorry, when the man from was it Foggy Bottom comes up and talks to you, he leaves the room. You know, there are certain people that aren't allowed in the room when that man comes in up to talk to you.
Well, that's true.
But she was saying he's going to be part of her cabinet, essentially. You know, the first dude. I love this thing. I haven't had anything new out of the Alaska Democratic News. Or, I can't remember. I linked to them. They're fun. They're good to read. It's not a bad paper. But they haven't had anything. The last couple, everybody's keeping nice and quiet. And I'm just sitting there going, please go back to Alaska. I want to see him get subpoenaed. I want to see him get arrested. I'm just waiting for some judge to say, you didn't show up for the subpoena. Come along, son.
I just wonder if they will.
It's just one of those things. It's like, I'm sorry, you have been subpoenaed in an investigation. It's not, theoretically, I guess it's
but,
not.
But can't you hear it now? You know, what would be the rationale for her insisting that the vice presidential dude be part of deliberations?
Well, you know, it says in 13th flip-floppians that a woman is to be subordinate to her husband, so.
And bang, there you go. And all the fundamentalist evangelicals, testify, sister.
It's one of those things. My favorite thing though is still wait till you get a room of Sundays together and open up the book to Leviticus and go, hello, we're going to talk a little bit. We're going to talk about some things that people have written about. Let's hear you explain a few of them, please.
Well, but look, you know, and it says very plainly that women are to be silent in church, and there she is marching up and down the stage right there in front of the highly expensive guitars and the
world-class drum set and the sound system, marching up and down, just talking her little fool head off when, you know, her fundamentalist literal interpretation of the Bible says that she is to be silent in church.
Well, what it got to be was something totally different, but on the same subject generally. I watched last night, I got watching, look over to C-SPAN, and last night they were interviewing Lionel.
You know, I heard about that earlier today.
He has a new book out, and he was talking to Brian Lamb, and it sounds like it might be a pretty good read. But he did the thing about the Bible, and he said, I believe people that totally believe in the Bible are what you call acceptably insane. He said, but, you know, he gave you the argument I gave you one time. He said, you know, okay, you can say Adam and Eve were the first humans. Okay, they had Cain and Abel and the third son. I can't think what the name is. Okay, who'd they marry?
Sure.
You know, I mean, he said it's a nice little parable, but said when you put it down and you look at it with a flashlight, it don't look so nice because you got a couple of questions you can't answer.
Well, you know, my 12-year-old son looked at me and asked that very same question the other day and said, it doesn't stand, you know, his words, it doesn't stand up to the analysis.
Well, his other one was, said, okay, now, Noah and his family and two of every animal were on this ark. They were the only survivors. And he looked right at Brian Lamb and he said, where did the Koreans come from?
Oh, but that's that whole business about the children of Ham. They were cursed with dark skin and, you know, the Koreans just faded after a while.
But, you know, it's just one of those things. You're sitting there going, well, yeah, there's just one family. Yeah.
And if you want to see a beautiful graphic, I don't know if Mark Kopp ever sees the hits from people wandering over there, but there's a graphic on his site today that just I forget what the title was, but the graphic by itself is just too precious to leave alone. It's one of those pictures of, you know, that sort of dirty blonde headed blue eyed Jesuses. And he's sitting on
Daniel Day-Lewis Jesus with the alabaster skin, yes?
Yeah, right. But he's sitting there on the back with this lovely pastoral, you know, I love all mankind, blah, blah, blah business look on his face. He's sitting on the back of a dinosaur. Oh, there's the caption. Yeah, and there's pterodactyls flying behind him, and there's a little baby dinosaur sitting on his lap. And it's beliefs.
Yep.
Some really should disqualify you from being the leader of the free world.
Well, you know, it's like we said, when you realize this woman basically believes the Flintstones is a documentary, you know.
I know.
But, you know, it's one of those things. I'd say we should y'all call Mark Kopp, but I know where he is right now, and he won't answer the phone. You know where Bart is right now.
No, where is he?
I'd say right now he's sitting watching TV. Bart will break down for the one show he will watch. You know what one of Bart's little extensions is?
Oh, poker.
Well, no. Right now he is probably watching Sarah Connor, The Terminator Chronicles.
Who's
on it, don't you?
This season. No, who?
Shirley Manson.
Oh, okay, sure. Yeah, then that's, you know, that's the... That's the solar system and the planets coming into perfect alignment for Bart Kopp.
I was just thinking he's
Central Time, so it's still 7 o'clock. So.
Oh yeah. Okay, but when he put that up, I just said I could probably hear. Probably when you have turn the computer on, I could probably hear him holler for that one. Oh.
Yeah.
But
I wish that woman would call him.
I know. Hey, but you know, we were talking about the. It's okay if you're a Republican. I just love these ones lately. You know, let's see. Now, the media went crazy about Reverend Wright, but we sure don't talk about her minister.
Yeah, and that guy is crazier than a sprayed roach.
Uh-huh. And, you know, we don't talk about they went crazy about the fact that, Hillary was lying about shooting in Bosnia. It's like, well, that's fine. Let's talk about Miss Palin and her trip to Kuwait.
They're all kind of, it's not like they get, it's all sand. Yeah.
Like I say, just remember, you know, when you get one little fact wrong, it's evil if you're a Democrat. If you're a Republican, it was a simple mistake.
Yeah, that's all. And it really, you know, and you're just nitpicking. I mean, That's because you hate us. Being in fact, in favor of facts and all that. Right. Yeah, I know.
All right, but I'm going to let you go. I know you got other people.
All right. Take care, Luke. Good to hear from you. Bye now. Yeah, I really do. I really want to start hearing I got to find time. I got to find a way to hear some of these right-wing freaks. I got to hear how they're justifying. But I know, because I'm going to share some of it with you. I mentioned, you know, don't let me get out of here without telling you about the American Family Association Voter Issue Guide. Now, the American Family Association is, in fact, a 501c3 charitable organization. They are not allowed to politic. All right? They're not allowed to, supposedly, endorse a candidate. So they do it through the back door with things like these voter issue guides, which are actually endorsements, but nobody's ever called them on it. Now, here we are. We're about to mortgage the futures, not of our kids, not of our grandkids. Oh, hell no. We're about to mortgage the future of generations unborn, unconceived, and undreamt of. Right? That is what is on the front burner. Right, wrong, or indifferent? Nah, nope, sorry. Not if you're the American Family Association. Now, bear in mind, you know, something that calls itself a family association, you'd think that they might have a little bit of, and, you know, them being all Jesus stuff and all, they might have a little bit of concern and compassion for actual families. You know, the ones that are losing their homes. The ones that have lost everything. The ones that have been crippled by bankruptcy in the last, 8 years, 4 years, 2 years, last year, been crippled by bankruptcy because, you know, daddy had to have a heart bypass and didn't have any insurance. Or maybe daddy had to have the heart bypass and daddy just died. Because he couldn't get one. Oh, he worked like a dog, daddy did. Went to all three jobs, never missed work, went to work when he was sick, and wouldn't leave when the chest pains started. And it wrecked the family. There's lots of families in America that have been wrecked that way. Then there's other families that have been wrecked because daddy answered the call of the National Guard that he joined to help out in times of tornadoes and floods and hurricanes and things like that. So he could go and help his neighbors survive that kind of stuff. But he wound up with his butt in the meat grinder in Iraq or Afghanistan. And that family got busted, and there's thousands of those. But you already know what the lead issue is on the voter issue guide for the 2008 presidential race of the American Family Association. Top of the document, it's kind of watermarked with the preamble to the Constitution. Remember the part that doesn't have God in it? You know, you can see it's laid over a waving flag. We the people, and you can see Art of the United, and you can see Article 1, Section 1, blah, blah, blah. AFA, American Family Association, Voter Issue Guide, 2008 Presidential Race. The number one issue, according to the AFA, for families in America, the number one issue, homer sectionality. Federal protection of traditional marriage. John McCain supports. Barack Obama opposes. State constitutional amendments that protect traditional marriage. John McCain supports. Barack Obama opposes. Teaching of homosexuality in the public schools. John McCain opposes. God bless him. And Barack Obama supports it. Now, I gotta admit, it's a little bit tough for me. I'm trying to figure, we gotta, thanks to Peter and the folks that he's brought to the network and the folks that came on their own, we've got a sizable audience, from the LGBT community. And I never got any of the homosexuality classes, in my public schools down there in Alabama. Praise Jesus. I guess. I don't know. But I need to know about these homosexuality classes. I didn't know, I didn't even think driver's ed was that complicated. But they're actually, the AFA, I mean, they wouldn't lie, would they? They're gonna give classes on how to be gay! Use of materials that encourage or support homosexuality as a positive lifestyle. John McCain opposes. Barack Obama supports. Hate crime laws, legislation that criminalizes certain actions or statements on the basis of sexual orientation. John McCain opposes them hate crime laws. He doesn't care how many little children get beat to death and stuffed in garbage cans or crucified on barbed wire fences in Wyoming. John McCain's real American. He's a war hero. He's a POW, don't you know? He opposes laws that would punish people for doing things like that. God bless America. Let's all sing. Barack Obama. Barack Obama, he supports them hate crime laws. He wants, Barack Obama, he hates us. He hates us for, see, he's a hater too. Homosexual adoption. John McCain opposes the adoption of homosexuals. Barack Obama supports it. When we all know God don't want no homosexuals adopted. There it is. The number two issue. Maybe we'll get to the financial crises here. The number two issue, sanctity of life. Now, never mind that mommy and daddy, who have moved the kids into the minivan that stays in the darkest back corner of the Wally World parking lot, never mind that their sanctity of life is, shall we say, diminished, seeing as how the young'uns run a risk of going hungry, and mommy and daddy run a risk of getting sick or starving or working themselves to death. There's a sanctity of, not on the American Family Association list. Number one sanctity of life issue, constitutional right to abortion. Roe versus Wade was correctly decided. John McCain opposes. Barack Obama supports. Demon. Protecting infants born alive. John McCain supports. And Barack Obama wants to eat them. Prohibiting partial birth abortion. John McCain supports that. Barack Obama opposes it. Never mind the fact that the legislation's already been passed. The American Family Association knows that they're dealing with a bunch of dunderheads and morons. What? I thought we took care of it. But there's Barack Obama, and he's still supporting it. They're going to partial birth abort more of them precious little babies. Making it a crime to cross state lines to obtain abortions for minors. John McCain supports it. Barack Obama opposes it. That Barack Obama, he wants to make sure that minors can cross state lines to get abortions. Gold miners, coal miners, copper miners, it don't matter. Any old kind of miner can cross a state line and get a abortion, and Barack Obama thinks it's just fine. Other key issues affecting the protection of a Christian family. Private handgun ownership. Yep. The followers of the Prince of Peace want to make sure that they can keep a AK-47 with a 60-round banana clip in it in the house in case any liberals attack. And John McCain supports that. Barack Obama. He opposes. School vouchers, immigration reform, border security, government control. There it is. Kinda. Government control of health care. John McCain opposes it because it's communism, and everybody knows John McCain ain't no communist. Barack Obama, he supports government control of health care. When everybody knows that the good book says right there in the 33rd chapter, oh, glory be to God, the 33rd chapter of accountancy, that's right between Kings and Samuel, that thou shalt not allow anyone but thy health care insurance carriers to manipulate, manage, and otherwise devastate thy nation with poor health care decisions. Says it right there. Government control of health care, it's again the Bible. That's right, it is. Reducing U.S. dependence on foreign oil, John McCain supports, Barack Obama opposes. And they're just lying. How this outfit gets away with keeping a 501c3 tax designation with the IRS is beyond me. But see, it's the fine print that gets you, because it's in bold. Reducing U.S. dependence on foreign oil. John McCain supports, Barack Obama opposes. Then the fine print. By lifting ban on offshore drilling for oil and gas. That is how stupid these evangelical fundamentalists are. They actually think that drilling means succeeding. Drill, baby, drill. You know, I'm becoming more and more impressed by the possible existence of this god of irony. There were the Republicans a month or so ago, a little less than that, screaming, drill, baby, drill, in their clavern or whatever they call it. And here, less than a month later, there's a lot of Americans just like me looking at Wall Street saying, burn, baby, burn. They're good. Honest to God, the conservatives and the Republican Party, they're getting the Pharaoh treatment. They really, really are. Whatever they wish for, whatever they declare, comes back on them. And I kind of like that kind of karma. This just in from Sophie. I was already mad and you hit another nerve with Paul Weyrich. I've been aware of Mr. Weyrich since he was plotting and planning his future with the Coors family and John Birchers in Colorado back in the 70s. One dangerous SOB who once told a crowd that he had no interest in building a strong America, his plan was to dismantle it piece by piece and establish a new America. Shades of Norquist and his drowning the government in the bathtub thinking. He's been extremely successful in his mission, serious as a stroke. And as usual, I'm sure most Americans have no idea who he is. Weyrich quotes, Sophie says, from the past that I had tucked away. Quote, we are different from previous generations of conservatives. We are no longer working to preserve the status quo. We are radicals working to overturn the present power structure of this country. 1987, in the Washington Post, Weyrich said, if we are going to be a serious nation, we need a serious system for selecting our leaders and advisors. We need some type of shadow government in which leaders and top advisors can be identified and developed. Then there's this. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of the people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down. That was in 1980 at a training session for 15,000 right-wing fundamentalist evangelical preachers in Dallas, Texas. And Sophie closes by saying, and so my sinking feeling regarding our country's future continues. That's what I meant. That's what I was talking about earlier. Flank attacks. Flank attacks. There we were, all set up. All set up for a frontal assault from the Repig-licking party. And our generals completely neglected our flanks. Well, surely to goodness, George Bush would never do something so stupid as to, you know, try to cripple the economy further by taking the last bit, little dregs of the Treasury and giving it to his buddies on Wall Street. I mean, the man's got no popularity. Well, damn, we've got no spine. It doesn't matter how popular he is or isn't. He can do what he will, because there ain't nobody to stop him. How about this for a quote? Found this browsing today over at WD40.com, D-U-B-Y-A, the letter D, then the numeral 4 and 0, WD40.com, our buddies Clyde and Wally and Dookie. Headline. And won't this just make you eat dirt and run rabbits? Headline. Pelosi. We won't hand over $700 billion blank check. I think if it was anybody but her saying it, I might feel a little bit reassured. But I've also heard her say that we will not continue to fund this war. I've heard her say that we will not put up with George Bush's excesses. I've heard her say a million things and then cave. I mean, she's caved so many times, we ought to call her Nancy the Spelunker Pelosi. We will not hand over a $700 billion blank check. Well, what will you do then, Nancy? Send it by bicycle courier? And maybe that's a little bit too cynical. Maybe it's a little bit too depressing. But it's what I, look, I'm not intellectualizing here. I'm feeling, and I'll confess to you when I'm feeling. I don't trust Nancy Pelosi. I don't trust Harry Reid. I don't trust it. Good God, I tried to call my senator's office today, Jay Rockefeller, and I got voicemail. Voicemail, for the love of God. This is a Rockefeller. He could pay 1,000 phone attendants, you know, and never feel it. And I get voicemail? You know what? If you can't have somebody there, and it wasn't just I tried once and got the voicemail. I dialed once, I dialed 10 minutes later, I dialed again 10 minutes later. About four times I tried. And eventually I gave up and said, well, you know, I was hoping I would reach a human being in the senator's office, but... And it wasn't the first day that I'd gotten the voicemail treatment. Between now and November, John D. Rockefeller IV has turned on the voicemail. Doesn't want to hear from the constituents unless they're saying something to him in the voting booth. Nah, it was just another nail in the coffin for me. Not going to vote for his little weirdo right-wing opponent, but I'm sure not going to vote for him. But there are enough benighted Democrats in this state who think that, who think that Jesus sent him here, that my lack of a vote probably won't make much of a difference. And I say that in a state of statistical certainty, okay? That's not me guessing. That's not me. Oh, it don't matter if I vote or not. And I'm not one of those people. Pelosi, we won't hand over $700 billion blank check. You know, there's another kind of truth in that, too. We won't hand over $700 billion blank check. But we will hand over a $1.3 trillion one. See, we weren't lying. Just goes on and on and on. Oh, by the way, just in case, you know, maybe you weren't, you might have missed this. While we're all doing economic navel gazing, there are a few other little stories banging around in the world. Here's one of them. Dateline Pakistan. It looks like we're pushing our luck in the Pakistani frontier area. This one is datelined Islamabad. Pakistani troops fire on intruding U.S. choppers. No, really. Pakistani troops fired on two U.S. helicopters that intruded into Pakistani airspace on Sunday night, forcing them to turn back to Afghanistan, according to a senior Pakistani security official. It's the second time that had happened in a week. Nerves are getting a little frayed on the frontier border area between Afghanistan and Pakistan. The helicopters violated the border in the area of Lawara Mandi. It's about 25 miles west of Maranshah. That's the biggest burg in North Waziristan in the tribal region. Happened about 9 p.m. Sunday evening. And it's all hush-hush. It's all on the QT. But those helicopters getting shot at by ground troops, well, they turned around and flew away. And you know, somebody needs to ask the Bush administration. I'm not being mean. I just need to know. I mean, it's their language. It's their lexicon. It's their euphemisms. I need to know if those American helicopters cut and run. I mean, they were crossing into Pakistan to go and stop some terrorists. You know, they're in a war and they're going to follow Osama bin Laden to the gates of hell. Unless we get shot at and then we're going to turn around and leave. Residents of the area also say that U.S. Predator drones have been flying over the Maranshah area. They haven't launched anything. But Zia Urrehman lives in Hamzoni village. That's near Maranshah. Just past the Maranshah cutoff. You get out and cut off here. Never mind. It's no fair funning around like that. Zia Urrehman, who lives in the area, said, "It's really so scary. We just can't sleep when you hear them flying. Because, you see, there's no guarantee, none whatsoever, that whoever the video game player is operating that drone, there's no guarantee that what he shoots at is actually going to be a bad thing or a bad person. It could be a wedding party. Apparently, there's lots of terrorists at wedding parties, to judge from the number of wedding parties that we have destroyed with our Hellfire missiles and whatnot. Can you imagine that? And see, this is part of what David Foster Wallace was writing about speaking about in his address that was transcribed. What it's writing about. There's a beautiful little segment that bears reading. It's worth remembering. He says, that the plain fact is, remember, he's addressing a college commencement. The plain fact is that you graduating seniors, and he's my age, so he's not being, you know, all McCainy and old fogey and stuff. The plain fact is that you graduating seniors do not yet have any clue what day in and day out really means. There happen to be whole large parts of adult American life that nobody talks about in commencement speeches. One such part involves boredom, routine, and petty frustration. The parents and older folks here will know all too well what I'm talking about. By way of example, let's say it's an average adult day, and you get up in the morning, go to your challenging white-collar college graduate job, and you work hard for 8 or 10 hours, and at the end of the day you're tired and somewhat stressed, and all you want is to go home and have a good supper and maybe unwind for an hour and then hit the sack early because, of course, you got to get up the next day and do it all again. But then you remember there's no food at home. You haven't had time to shop this week because of your challenging job. And so now after work, you have to get in your car and drive to the supermarket. It's the end of the workday, and the traffic is apt to be very bad. So getting to the store takes way longer than it should. And when you finally get there, the supermarket is very crowded because, of course, it's the time of day when all the other people with jobs also try to squeeze in some grocery shopping. And the store is hideously lit with and infused with soul-killing muzak or corporate pop, and it's pretty much all over the huge, overlit stores, confusing. It's pretty much the last place you want to be, but you can't just get in and quickly and get out. You have to wander all over the huge, overlit stores, confusing aisles to find the stuff you want, and you have to maneuver your junky cart through through all these other tired, hurried people with carts, etc., cutting stuff out because this is a long ceremony. This must have been a heck of an address to hear. And eventually you get all your supper supplies, except now it turns out there aren't enough checkout lanes open, even though it's the end of the day rush. So the checkout line is incredibly long, which is stupid and infuriating. But you can't take your frustration out on the frantic lady working the register, who's overworked at a job whose daily tedium and meaninglessness surpasses the imagination of any of us here at a prestigious college. But anyway, you finally get to the checkout line's front, and you pay for your food, and you get told to have a nice day in a voice that is the absolute voice of death. Then you have to take your creepy, flimsy plastic bags of groceries in your cart, with the one crazy wheel that pulls maddeningly to the left, all the way out through the crowded, bumpy, littery parking lot, and then you have to drive all the way home through the slow, heavy, SUV-intensive rush hour traffic, etc., etc. Everyone here has done this, of course, but it hasn't yet been part of you graduates' actual life routine day after week after month after year. But it will be. And many more dreary, annoying, seemingly meaningless routines besides. But that is not the point. The point is that petty, frustrating crap like this is exactly where the work of choosing is going to come in. Because the traffic jams and crowded aisles and long checkout lines give me time to think, and if I don't make a conscious decision about how to think and what to pay attention to, I'm going to be pissed and miserable every time I have to shop. Because my natural default setting is the certainty that situations like this are really all about me, about my hungriness and my fatigue and my desire to just get home, and it's going to seem for all the world like everybody else is just in my way. And who are all these people in my way? And look at how repulsive most of them are, and how stupid and cow-like and dead-eyed and non-human they seem in the checkout line, or at how annoying and rude it is that people are talking loudly on cell phones in the middle of the line. And look at how deeply and personally unfair this is. Or, of course, if I'm in a more socially conscious liberal arts form of my default setting, I can spend the time in the end-of-the-day traffic being disgusted about all the huge, stupid, lane-blocking SUVs and Hummers and V12 pickup trucks burning their wasteful, selfish 40-gallon tanks of gas, and I can dwell on the fact that the patriotic or religious bumper stickers always seem to be on the biggest, most disgustingly selfish vehicles driven by the ugliest, most disgustingly selfish, inconsiderate, and aggressive drivers. And I can think about how our children's children will despise us for wasting all the future's fuel and probably screwing up the climate, and how spoiled and stupid and selfish and so how disgusting we all are, and how modern consumer society just sucks, and so forth and so on. You get the idea, he said. If I choose to think this way in a store and on the freeway, fine. Lots of us do. Except thinking this way tends to be so easy and so automatic that it doesn't have to be a choice. It is my natural default setting. It's the automatic way that I experience the boring, frustrating, crowded parts of adult life when I'm operating on the automatic, unconscious belief that I am the center of the world and that my immediate needs and feelings are what should determine the world's priorities. Thing is that, of course, there are totally different ways to think about these kinds of situations. In this traffic, all these vehicles stopped and idling in my way, it's not impossible that some of these people in SUVs have been in horrible auto accidents in the past and now find driving so terrifying that their therapist has all but ordered them to get a huge, heavy SUV so they can feel safe enough to drive. Or that the Hummer that just cut me off is maybe being driven by a father whose little child is hurt or sick in the seat next to him, and he's trying to get his kid to the hospital, and he's in a bigger, more legitimate hurry than I am. It is actually I who am in his way. Or I can choose to force myself to consider the likelihood that everyone else in the supermarket's checkout line is just as bored and frustrated as I am, and that some of these people probably have harder, more tedious, and painful lives than I do. He says again, please don't think that I'm giving you moral advice or that I'm saying you are supposed to think this way or that anyone expects you to just automatically do it, because it's hard. It takes will and effort. And if you're like me, some days you won't be able to do it or you just flat out won't want to. But most days, if you're aware enough to give yourself a choice, you can choose to look differently at this fat, dead-eyed, over-made-up lady who just screamed at her kid in the checkout line. Maybe she's not usually like this. Maybe she's been up three straight nights holding the hand of a husband who's dying of bone cancer. Or maybe this very lady is the low-wage clerk at the motor vehicle department who just yesterday helped your spouse resolve a horrific, infuriating red-tape problem through some small act of bureaucratic kindness. Of course, none of this is likely, but it's also not impossible. It just depends what you want to consider. If you're automatically sure that you know what reality is, and you are operating on your default setting, then you, like me, probably won't consider possibilities that aren't annoying and miserable. But if you really learn how to pay attention, then you will know there are other options. It will actually be within your power to experience a crowded, hot, slow, consumer hell type situation as not only meaningful, but sacred. On fire with the same force that made the stars. Love, fellowship, the mystical oneness of all things deep down. Not that mystical stuff is necessarily true. The only thing that's capital T true is that you get to decide how you're gonna try to see it. And that's the difference between us and them. Honest to God, it is. And it's something I get a little bit of affirmation out of David Foster Wallace's address there at Kenyon College, because it's the kind of stuff that motivates me. I see a quote from Ziaur Rahman, and I don't know if Ziaur Rahman is male or female. And Ziaur Rahman says, it's really so scary we can't sleep when you hear them flying. And in my mind, and I know you and yours, you can at least make the attempt to imagine the life of Ziaur Rahman. And you can imagine trying to sleep in whatever sort of home Ziaur Rahman has. You can imagine trying to get a night's rest before a day that is far more brutal than any that you or I will ever know. And you can know that Ziaur Rahman is not a terrorist, whatever the hell a terrorist is. Because I have a hard time hanging on to a working definition of terrorist, because the goal lines keep getting shifted. Osama bin Laden was a terrorist, but since he was a right winger, Timothy McVeigh isn't. Zarqawi terrorist. The guy who shot up the Tennessee Unitarian Universalist congregation, well, he votes Republican, so he's not a terrorist. They keep changing the rules on me, and it's really tough. So, but I feel confident in saying that Ziaur Rahman is not a terrorist. If Ziaur Rahman is a male, he likely worries about his wife and his children, because children are children no matter where you are on the planet. Men are men and women are women. Only the cultural taboos, only the mores, and only the tribal rules change. And you can imagine, you can almost try to imagine the life of Ziaur Rahman hearing in the middle of the night the buzz of that predator drone overhead and wondering if this is the time, if this is the time when everything ends. Or wondering if in a matter of minutes you'll be flying through the air and scrambling to get back to the rubble of your home, trying to dig out the corpses of your children and your wife. In many ways, imagining Ziaur Rahman as a female is 1,000 times worse. Because then it's the husband in bed beside you, the children asleep in some other room perhaps, and the life growing within you, and hearing the buzz of that predator drone that you and I have paid for overhead, and wondering if that life that has just quickened inside your womb will ever get to see the light of day, because America is fighting terrorism. I read this stuff and I'm outraged. What, I'm going to scream about it? You don't need me to scream about it. I don't want to scream about it. I'll lose you if I scream about it. I want to talk about it in tones like this, because I want our discussion of the lives of the Ziaur Rahmans of the world, I want our discussion of their lives to be very cold, very calculated, very rational. And by that I mean I want us to understand exactly who they are in relation to who you are and to who I am on this little blue dot that's hurtling through the universe. Conceive, if you will, of the smallest, most infinitesimally tiny particle of matter that exists. Something way down, way, you know, all that really bizarre physics that goes way down below the electrons and protons and neutrinos and things like that. The tiny stuff. Now realize that you're smaller than that in the scope of the universe. That Ziaur Rahman is smaller than that. That George Bush is smaller than that. That Dick Cheney is smaller than that. All in the scope of the universe. But that one tiny, itsy-bitsy particle is willing to destroy the existence of hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, nay, millions of other particles to satisfy some sort of intellectual or perhaps... No, it's probably more of a reptile brain the function. And because George Bush is profoundly underdeveloped, and Dick Cheney, and all of that hateful, murderous, bloodthirsty, blood-soaked crowd, and the Republican Party that's behind him, and the conservative value voters who put these bastards in office, that they are so underdeveloped that they are compelled to live in fear, and that their fear compels them to ruin your life, your children's lives, and the lives of other particles on the furthest side of this planet, so that maybe they'll feel a little less fearful. But you know, I read it earlier in the program, that fear never dissipates. It only gets worse and worse and worse. You know exactly what I'm talking about. I'm trying to find here. A piece of right-wing mail that I got a while back. I shared another piece that I got with this person from you, or with you that I got from this person. But if I can find this other one, I want. Yeah, here it is. I want to share this with you, too. This came from our resident right-winger. And it seems appropriate to share with you at this point in time. It's appropriate both from the standpoint of what we've been talking about in the immediate past, as well as what we've been talking about in terms of welfare queens on Wall Street. This one is titled The Ant and the Grasshopper, with the admonition that this one is a little different. Two different versions, two different morals. Old version, the ant works hard in the withering heat all summer long, building his house and laying up supplies for the winter. The grasshopper thinks the ant is a fool and laughs and dances and plays the summer away. Come winter, the ant is warm and well-fed. The grasshopper has no food or shelter, so he dies out in the cold. Moral of the story, be responsible for yourself. Remember, this came to me from one of those upstanding, value-voting, right-wing, Bush-enabling, personal responsibility Republicans. Here's the modern version, according to a right-winger. This is what we're up against. This is what the right wing, this is their perceived reality. Even as we prepare to give away unborn future generations to a bunch of sleazy, dirty, dishonest, greedy, avarice-infested Wall Street manipulators. The modern version, according to a right-winger, of the ant and the grasshopper. The ant works hard in the withering heat all summer long, building his house and laying up supplies for the winter. The grasshopper thinks the ant is a fool and laughs and dances and plays the summer away. Come winter, the shivering grasshopper calls a press conference and demands to know why the ant should be allowed to be warm and well-fed while others are cold and starving. CBS, NBC, PBS, CNN, and ABC show up to provide pictures of the shivering grasshopper next to a video of the ant in his comfortable home with a table filled with food. America is stunned by the sharp contrast. How can this be that in a country of such wealth, this poor grasshopper is allowed to suffer so? Kermit the Frog appears on Oprah with the grasshopper, and everybody cries when they sing, "It's not easy being green." Jesse Jackson stages it. See, there's all you got. See, we got the person of color in Kermit the Frog. I know you think I'm kidding, but I'm not. You introduce color in a green person, and then you work your way into the full-on right-wing repiglic and bigotry and racism. Kermit the Frog appears on Oprah. See, Kermit and Oprah with the grasshopper, and everybody cries when they sing, "It's not easy being green." Jesse Jackson stages a demonstration in front of the ant's house where the news stations film the group singing, "We Shall Overcome." See, that's what it is. We shall overcome. That's just a big old joke, because civil rights and singing "We Shall Overcome," which was born in the era of slavery, well, the nerve of them singing that they would overcome the slave owners, and the nerve of the civil rights movement resurrecting and readopting that song in pursuit of actual equality in America. The nerve. And they sing, "We Shall Overcome," and Jesse then has the group kneel down to pray to God for the grasshopper's sake. Oh, we're not done. Nancy Pelosi and John Kerry exclaim in an interview with Larry King that the ant has gotten rich off the back of the grasshopper, and both call for an immediate tax hike on the ant to make him pay his fair share. See, that's the difference between the right-wing reality, or the right-wing perceived reality of this stupid little email versus the reality on the ground. The bastards that we're going to bail out are grasshoppers. They haven't worked. They're electron pushers, number crunchers. When was the last time that, what's his name, John Fald or whatever, Richard Fald, you know, the guy from Lehman. When's the last time that bastard broke a sweat? Unless it was on his, you know, $5,000 cardio machine. Now, you can do something on Wall Street, but for the love of God, you know, no. Mm-mm. Don't compare it with the people who carry this nation on their backs. Finally, the EEOC drafts the Economic Equity and Anti-Grasshopper Act, retroactive to the beginning of the summer. Isn't this cute? The ant is fined for failing to hire a proportionate number of green bugs and having nothing left to pay his retroactive taxes. His home is confiscated by the government. Well, I'll be damned. Isn't this cute? See, this really is the reality that right-wingers live in. This is the America they think really exists, where all you've got to do is holler enough and somebody will give you a place to live. By golly. Where you only get your house taken away because you've been confiscatorily taxed out of it. Never mind that right-wing policies create situations whereby, you know, you lose your house because of dummied-up, faked-up, frauded-up, rubed-up, ginned-up the mortgage schemes that rob people not only of their savings but of their futures as well. Oh, but we're not done. Hillary gets her old law firm to represent the grasshopper in a defamation suit against the ant, and the case is tried before a panel of judges that Bill Clinton appointed from a list of single-parent welfare recipients. These people are idiots. First of all, right-wingers, just so you'll know, because the liberals, the progressives, the decent human beings listening to this show already know, Hillary Clinton's old law firm was called the Rose Law Firm. It was the oldest law firm west of the Mississippi River, the Rose Law Firm of Little Rock, Arkansas. The Rose Law Firm has never, hardly to this day, if ever, represented an individual against a collective. The Rose Law Firm cuts its teeth and makes its daily bread representing Walmart against the individual workers who sue it. The Rose Law Firm makes its bones by going out and busting unions. The Rose Law Firm makes its bones by defending insurance companies against the people that they defraud, rip off, and ruin. The Rose Law Firm makes its bones by defending banks against the people that they destroy. We square on that? The ant loses the case. The story ends as we see the grasshopper finishing up the last bits of the ant's food while the government house he is in, which just happens to be the ant's old house, crumbles around him because he doesn't maintain it. The ant has disappeared in the snow. But wait, we're going to get one last chance to turn a little bit of bigotry back in on itself. The grasshopper is found dead in a drug-related incident, and the house now abandoned is taken over by a gang of spiders who terrorize the once peaceful neighborhood. Moral of the story: be careful how you vote in 2008. Be careful indeed. Not just careful, be vigilant. Be proactive, be determined. Because that email has gone all over the country. and there are people who don't have enough knowledge about current events or facts or the situation on the ground. That's right, that Barack Obama's going to give away my house, probably to somebody that's blacker than he is. You know it, and I know it. I'd like to see a little more leadership coming from him on this Wall Street bailout business. But Paul Weyrich was right to one degree. Nobody's going to talk about, neither McCain nor Obama, what needs to be done to fix this. And all of a sudden, after years of the fashion and fashionability of praising the free market to high heaven, all of a sudden, that's not in fashion either. So nobody's going to talk. You won't free market. We're done hearing about the free market. Nope, you're on the hook. In one form or another, this bailout's going to get passed. You may as well get used to it. Ain't nothing says you got to like it, but you may as well get used to it. And if you do not, wear out the phones and the email electrons or whatever. If you do not do that, it will be worse than your wildest dreams. The least we can hope for is a little bit of oversight, a bit more regulation, and that they don't get to do this all over again anytime soon. Because you got to look at the timeline. Oh, yeah, I remember 1987. That was toward the end of Reagan's second term. We had a market crash. Market tanked under Bush 1. A Democrat built things back up, and the market's tanking under Bush 2. It's what they do. It's how they operate. And those who do not learn from history are doomed to repeat it. And there are millions of ignorant people who are willing to impose upon us the doom of their own ignorance. That much is undeniably true. Thank you, everyone, for joining in this evening, whether you called, whether you emailed, or whether you listened and screamed in your own between your own four walls. Thank you. Thank you to everyone who keeps the horn on the air, our contributors. We had a couple of very generous contributions recently, and we are very, very grateful for them. Sadly, it didn't get us all the way to the 2,000 bucks we need to raise any given month. But it put a little bit down in the hole that we live in so that we can see a little closer to the top of the hole that we live in. Thank you. If you're able, feel free to jump by headonradionetwork.com and use the PayPal button, or you can use the snail mail address that you can find there as well. Either way helps. Thank you to our friends at Coal River Mountain Watch, who sponsor in part everything on the horn. They are indeed the bravest, hardest-working people I know. Thanks to John Fox, our chief engineer, who is at present tooling up for his new weekend show, which we hope will begin fairly soon, maybe even next weekend. I don't know. I think John's a little under the weather right now. Thanks to Peter Godbold, our IT professional. Peter is in internet hell again. Clear blue skies in beautiful Tallahassee when there went his internet, so he'll be a rerun. Thanks to Ben Birch, the hardest working man in liberal talk, who single-handedly saved liberal talk on the internet with WhiteRoseSociety.org. We'll be back tomorrow evening. Until then, please remember, RMR, Gina, it's all for you.